morning. This is WHFR Dearborn, and welcome to another Tuesday Radio Vault program. Let's quickly go over the menu and then get to it without further ado. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with an early episode of Fibber McGee and Molly from July 5th of 1936. Yes, thank you. And we will go right into a couple of Jack Benny shows, early shows from 1939, as a matter of fact, February of that month, the Bodyguard episode, where Jack challenges Fred Allen, and Jack Benny's birthday was around Valentine's Day. And we'll hear the first episode with Carmichael the Polar Bear. So that'll be fun. We also have on tap the CBS Radio Workshop, and we might actually get to that this hour. We'll be listening to Lovers, Villains, and Fools from much later, 1956. So if you're ready, certainly I'm ready to go back to July 6th of 1936. And an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program. Good evening, everyone. The makers of Johnson's Wax present Marion and Jim as Fibber McGee and Molly. Ted Weems and his orchestra open the show with Is It True What They Say About Dixie? Tell them, Ted.
Does the sun really shine all the time? Sweet magnolia blossom round everybody's door. Before Peachy Blossom did it came anymore. Is it true what they say about morning? Is a dream by the stream so sublime? Do they bow, do they love, like they say in every song? Is it true that's where I belong?
It was probably inevitable that our two friends should wind up in a museum. But oddly enough, they're not on exhibit. No, they're just visiting the Wistful Vista Museum in a lovely burst of scientific curiosity. They thirst for knowledge. They hunger for the facts of life. Besides raining outside, the museum was the nearest place to go. So here they are, just entering the place, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Haven't we been in here before?
That's me. Guess we never happened to be passing the place before when it was raining. Besides...
Excuse me, laddie.
What's on your mind, bud?
Would you kindly be telling me what might this building be?
Oh, this is the Wistful Vista Museum, mister.
Oh, I should have known as much. Thank you for the information.
Hey, wait a minute, bud. If you didn't know it was a museum, why'd you come in the first place?
Well, laddie, I was walking along the street anew. I was noticing a sign that said, Admission Free. So naturally, I come in.
Hey, that reminds me. They're giving free parachute jumps at the Wistful Vista Airport.
Are you sure?
Sure.
And which direction would that be, Noo?
Straight down.
No. He means which way is the airport, McGee?
Aye.
Oh, the airport. 6 blocks south and 2 blocks east.
Thank you kindly for your interest. I'll be going right out, but what if the parachute wouldn't be working properly?
In that case, they give you another chance.
Free?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hey, Molly. Look at the fellow made out of tin at the end of the hall there. Kind of tricky, huh?
Well, that's a suit of armor, McGee. They wore them in the olden days. They were for the night.
Oh, I see. Evening dress. Don't you get it, Molly? I see.
Ain't funny, McGee.
Okay.
You know, McGee, what I don't understand is how they ever got on a horse with all that hardware on them.
Why, shucks, that's simple.
How?
Why, they put on these here iron pajamas and stood over a little colt till it grew up. Yes, sir. Come on, Molly. Hey, what's this room here?
Oh, this must be the Egyptian room, McGee. See all those mummies and the inscriptions?
What good are them inscriptions, anyhow? What good are all them inscriptions? That's what I'd like to know. Nobody can read them.
Why, certainly. I can read them.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Harpo. You read Egyptian?
Why, easily. Now, see this inscription on this old Egyptian chariot here?
Mm-hmm. What's it say?
Why, it says, King Tut-Tut of the 5th Dynasty, B.C., protected his chariot against the desert sun and sand with Johnson's auto wax.
Mummy's the word. Be seeing you, Harpo.
Come on, McGee. Let's look around and hear the lecture.
Wait a minute, Molly. Look at them skulls there. Hey, bud. What are these here skulls?
Oh, those.
Yeah.
Why, the big skull there is Alexander the Great at the age of 65.
Oh, I get it. I suppose that little tiny skull is the same guy as the baby.
No, it's the skull of the last pinhead who pulled that gag.
Pulled a boner that time, McGee.
Well, hey, there's Ted Ween. Hi there, Ted.
Oh, hello there, Ted.
Hello, Molly. Hello, Fibber.
What you doing here, Ted?
Oh, I'm interested in Indian culture.
Indian culture? You understand the sign language?
Oh, I speak the sign language very well.
You do, huh? So do I.
Oh, is that so? Well, go on, talk some sign language.
Okay. Sign language. Keep off the grass.
No smoking.
Beware the dog.
Exit.
No hunting.
Fresh eggs.
No parking. Johnson's auto wax.
Quiet, please.
Wet paint.
Ladies.
Gents. The glory of love.
Just give a little. Take a little. And let your poor heart break a little. To laugh a little, cry a little, before the clouds roll by a little, that's the story of, that's the glory of love. As long as there's the two of us, we've got the world in all its charm. And when the world is true with us, each other's arms. You've got to win a little, lose a little, and always have the blues a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
Wistful Vista Museum, Fibber and Molly are still taking refuge from the rain. Nothing like a little bad weather to stir up the intellect. Here they are, wondering what to see next.
What's in that door there, Molly?
Oh, I think it's a private office, McGee. It says Miss Dorothy Dimwit, assistant curator.
Maybe she can tell us what to see first.
Oh, how do you do?
Oh, are you Miss Dorothy Dimwit?
Yes, I am. Well, who would you come in? Just set those old bones on one of the chairs.
You mean McGee?
Oh, no. I mean those old skeletons. They're the bones of some prehistoric animal.
Oh.
I think it's a hippus grimus, or maybe it's a brontohippus. It really doesn't matter much, does it? No, it really doesn't. At least I don't think it does. Do you? Certainly not, of course.
You sure these ain't the bones of a Harposaurus wilcoxus, Dick?
Well, maybe it is. I wouldn't know. I just spent 10 months with an expedition into Outer Mongolia. Or was it out in Inner Mongolia? Well, it doesn't matter much. Do you think so? I thought the Great Wall of China was so interesting. There's so many bricks in it, really. I think bricks are lovely, don't you? Of course you do.
Bricks never struck me that way.
Well, what we came in for, Miss Dimwit?
Just call me Dorothy. Everybody calls me Dorothy. When I was little, they called me Dotty.
I'll bet they still do sometimes.
McGee.
Now, what's particularly interesting in the museum, Dimmy?
Oh, we have some lovely exhibits. Just lovely. Some of our wax figure groups are simply fascinating. Don't you think so? Of course you do. I mean, you will when you see them. You will see them, won't you? Of course you will. Naturally. And when you see them, you'll think they're just lovely. Of course you will.
Well, now, where are these wax figures, then?
Oh, just around the corner, to the left. Or is it to the right? I don't remember. But you'll find them all right. Of course you will. Naturally. Just look around and you'll see them. Yes, of course you will. Thank you so much for coming in. I hope I'll see you again. I will see you again, won't I?
Oh, of course you will. Real interesting woman, eh, Molly? Oh, is she? Don't you think so? Of course you do, that.
Quiet. Let's go see those wax figures. Oh, there they are. My, look at the crowd around them.
Say, can we get close enough to hear the lecture, Molly?
Sure. Squeeze in between them two wax figures there, Mickey.
Okay. And furthermore, ladies and gentlemen, science is unable to place an exact date on the existence of these primitive features. Now, observe this middle figure here, please. The brutish cast of the features. The low brow, indicating subnormal intelligence. The undershot jaw showing signs of a primitive carnivorous survival. The small brain development. Now, this man probably had the instinct and the intelligence of an ape. Low-grade ape. Observe the features.
Hey, take that stick out of my face.
Hey, that's not an ape. That's me husband, you big Lugan.
Oh, I beg your pardon, madam. I'm sorry, sir. I mistook you for one of the wax figures. Now, this figure over here, ladies and gentlemen.
This is a fine museum.
Hey, Molly, do I really look like a monkey?
A monkey? Huh? By the idea. Turn around. No, you don't.
Are you an attendant?
Well, no, sis, I ain't. But I can answer any questions you want to ask.
Well, can you tell me why all these mummies are wrapped up like this?
Go ahead, tell her, McGee.
Oh, you betcha, sis. These mummies is all taken from the tomb of Hi-Ho the Pharaoh, and they're all government officials of ancient Egypt.
Well, they may be Egyptian officials, but why are they wrapped up like that?
That's how they died, sis. Strangled themselves in red tape.
Oh, thank you.
Nice going, McGee. Look at the figure of the Stone Age man carving on the rock.
Hmm. Yeah, they didn't have paper or pencils in them days, Molly. Had to carve the morning paper on a cliff. I suppose this fella's kind of a prehistoric colonist.
Chiseling some news.
Excuse me once more, please.
What's the matter now, sis?
Is there much here on Cleopatra?
There was never much anywhere on that gal, sis. Hey, Molly. Look at that gold coffin.
That's an esophagus, McGee.
A who?
That's not so. Not so, my little scarab. Sarcophagus is the word.
Oh, excuse me.
You one of the lecturers, bud?
Yes. I'm an expert on Egyptology.
Fine.
Very interesting people, the Egyptians. Very interesting. Built the pyramids out of large pieces of rock.
Everybody knows that.
Yes, my little hieroglyphic. But where do they get the rocks? There are no rocks in the desert, you know.
You're the expert. How'd the rocks get there? Or did they just take them for granted?
Ha, 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 ha,
Well, how did the rocks get there, mister?
They were always there, according to my theory. The pyramids were there first, and they built the desert around them.
Where'd they get all the sand, Bud?
One thing at a time, my little oasis. I haven't got that far in my researches as yet. No, not yet. However...
Just a minute, mister. Now, can you tell us what was the original purpose of the pyramids?
Certainly, my little scarab. The pyramids were first built of stables.
Huh? Stables?
Yes, yes, stables. So the king wouldn't have to walk a mile for a
camp. Careful there, Bud. This is the Johnson's Wax Program.
Oh, yes, yes. So it is, so it is. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must decipher this next inscription here.
Oh, listen, McGee. He's going to read in Egyptian.
Let me see now. King Amenhotep III, the fourth dynasty. He lived nasty and he died nasty. David fought the Philistines with the jawbone of an announcer. Built the third pyramid with 10,000 slaves and a short beard. Just as I thought, my friends, my theory is absolutely right.
What is your theory, Bud?
My theory is that I'd give the whole thing up for one good cigar.
Well, yeah. Give him one.
Oh, sure, here's a cigar, Bud.
Thank you. But I sent a good cigar. Must have found this weed in a mummy cave. Must have crept into a crypt and got it, yes. However, I can throw away the cigar and smoke the cellophane. Good day to you, my little museum pieces. Good day to you all.
Now, oh, yes, I remember now. You were going to read this here Stone Age inscription, McGee. What does it say?
Oh, it says, well, can you beat that? It just goes to show how history repeats itself. It says, July 6, 2036 B.C., Og Weems, the caveman, and Ugmo Tanner, the hermit, practiced new war dance entitled, This'll Make You Whistle. This'll Make You Whistle. Can you speak to that, Morris?
No, but Ted Weems can.
Put an end to your labor, and it'll turn December to June. It'll make a friend of your neighbor, even if you don't know how to carry a tune. Oh, this will make you whistle, bound to make you whistle. Start you off on Monday and right through to Sunday, bound to make you whistle all the time.
Getting down to cases with the mummies, Fibber and Molly move along to the next room in the Wistful Vista Museum. Here they are, just entering the zoological room.
My, my, this is a real interesting place here, isn't it, McGee?
Mm-hmm.
Look at all those animals. Bears, elephants, buffaloes, and Silly Watson.
I would spoke well of you, Miss McGee.
Hi, Sil.
Hi, boss. Were you looking for something, please?
We're just looking for a dry place out of the rain, Sil.
Yes, sir. It's just about the driest place what there is any place, I suppose, Sil.
What are you doing here, Silly?
What?
You working here, Sil?
Yes, sir.
And what doing?
Fixing up animals and stuff, please, ma'am. I take a lot of bones and the skin and fix them up to look like they was alive.
That must be real interesting, Phil.
Yeah, that 2 bits an hour is always interesting to me, boss. I nearly got fired yesterday, though.
Yeah. Why?
Made a mistake, ma'am. Oh. Tried to fit a lion's skin on the skeleton of an ostrich. I had 2 legs left over.
I made a worse mistake than that yesterday, Phil. I put 2 frog skins on a horse.
Is there anything particular doing today, Sylvie?
Yes, ma'am. They lectures, please, ma'am. There's a talk in that room over there in a few minutes, ma'am. Then there's a lecture on them little old Egyptian dummies.
Mummies.
Yes, ma'am. Then there's a talk later on whoosology.
On what, Phil?
Whoosology. That's animals, please.
Oh.
Yes, well, excuse me now, boss. I gotta go connect the whale.
You gotta what?
I gotta connect the whale, please, ma'am. We got a lot of whale's bones, ma'am, and I gotta make a whale out of it.
Or something. Why don't you divide them up and make 2 sharks?
I need another fin to do that, boss. They won't pay you. That's a joke, please. Yeah. Well, excuse me now, please. I gotta pick up a little whale.
Billy's busier than
excuse me, please, but when is the next lecture in here?
Just a moment, madam. Here comes the lecturer now, Professor Scrimplebottom.
Oh, hi there, Prof. What you going to talk on today?
Why, on the platform. Right up here on the... who wants to know?
We do.
It's impossible. Certainly, madam, certainly. It's our policy to give the public the works, the worst, the finest, we try to answer all... what is the question again?
We want to know the subject of your talk, Doc.
So do I. who wouldn't? After all, we are gathered here in a small, insufferable gripe. small, informal group. To discuss some of the more... who's got a pencil?
I have.
That's fine. Always carry a pencil. Now... What I was going to say, you all realize, I'm sure, that the animals up the Western Hempstead...
What?
Hammers, delicious. In the Western Hemisphere, are all divided into... that's why we're here today.
Why?
Of course they do. Tell me that answer. Repeat that remark, question, please.
I said, why are we here?
I think it's to keep me from going to lunch.
Why?
I was thinking of... now take the zebra.
I don't want it, Doc. You take it.
Thanks. I don't smoke. The elephant, my friends, is noted for its... but my favorite of all, that is to say, the horse. A very intelligent animal. Who's got a racing form?
Well, what's that got to do?
Probably. Nobody ever proved it. And that concludes the lecture for tomorrow. Yesterday. Come in again at 5:00 after the last race at Arlington. Our next talk will be on the subject. It's very interesting. Say, has anybody seen my umbrella around here?
Did I learn anything? I'll say I did.
What'd you learn?
I learned that next time it rains, we better be passing the library.
Oh, I don't know. I think the afternoon's been very... McGee, look. What's the matter with this man coming this way?
Oh, my little darling, I've lost you. I'll never forgive myself for letting you go. Oh, dear, oh, my darling.
Why, what's the matter, Bud? Is there anything we can do?
Have you lost a dear one, Mr.?
Yes. Oh, yes, I have. I'll never forgive myself for letting her go. Oh, she was such a beauty.
Oh, who was she, Bud, if we ain't been too curious?
Oh, no, not at all, no. No, I'm so unhappy. No, I'll never see her again. Oh. One of the finest snakes I ever saw.
Oh,
I let her go.
Heavenly days, maybe a snake.
Quiet, Molly. Was it poisonous, Bud?
Oh, yes. Very deadly. Oh, my beauty, why did I ever let you go?
That's what I want to know. Oh, dear, a deadly snake is running around here loose. What do we do, McGee?
Oh, just stand up there on that chair, Molly, and give me your umbrella.
McGee, what's that under your foot?
Ah! Hey, don't do that. It's just my shoelace untied. Now, keep quiet. I'll find the
dead. McGee.
Huh? What?
Look inside the glass case. They're looking right at me. Oh!
Dangerous looking reptile, ain't he, Molly? I'll fix him.
Oh, be careful, McGee. Be careful.
Careful, nothing. I'll fix him.
Here, what's going on here? Who smashed that case?
I did.
What for?
Well, if you think we're going to stand here and get bit by a snake.
That snake is stuffed. He couldn't bite anybody.
Oh, yeah? Well, how about the one that got away?
What do you mean, got away? What snake got away?
Why, that tall, bald-headed man was in here crying because one of his poisonous snakes got away from him.
Oh, him? That guy lost a rattlesnake in Cincinnati 20 years ago, and he's been crying about it ever since.
Kind of crazy, huh?
McGee, you're the one that's crazy.
What do you mean, Molly?
Imagine a man in Wistful Vista trying to kill a snake in Cincinnati with an umbrella.
Museum was real interesting.
Yes, it was, McGee. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of a musty-smelling place, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Shucks, you can't expect mummies to smell like poppies. Good night.
Good night, all.
Wilcox speaking. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
When what you're listening to gets to be a bit too much, it's good to go back to where it all began, the radio. Tune in to WHFR.FM for relaxing live shows, hosts you can connect with, and alternative variety music that you won't be able to get enough of. That's WHFR.FM at 89.3. WHFR Dearborn. We're making waves, so dial in and catch them.
Attention licensed practical nurses. Are you looking for a convenient way to earn your RN degree? Do you need the flexibility of a program who recognizes you for your previous hard work as an LPN? Here's great news. Henry Ford College has exactly what you're looking for with their advancement LPN to RN bridge program. You can advance your career and become a licensed registered nurse. Want more info? Give us a call at our School of Health and Human Services at 313-845-9877. That's 313-845-9877.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Kenny Baker, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Just One of Those Things. Things played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we bring you... Oh, just a moment, folks. Mary, where's Jack?
He'll be right in. He's in the next room sending a telegram.
Oh, he's been in there 10 minutes. What's it all about?
I don't know. Jack said it was none of my business, so let's open the door and listen.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, Mary. It isn't cricket.
We're not in England now. Open it up, Mary.
Okay. Gee, he looks mad.
Operator, will you please pay attention? I asked for Western Union, you gave me the Plumbers Union 3 times.
I did?
Yes, I'm not a plumber. I don't know a plunger from a trombone. Now, will you please get me Western Union?
All right, handsome.
Handsome? Well, you can't even see my face.
Well, I can dream, can't I?
That's all you've been doing. Now, will you please make it snappy?
Just a moment, I'll let you talk to information.
Look, I don't want to talk to information.
For goodness sake, you can talk to the girl. You don't have to marry her.
Look, miss, I'm in a hurry. Will you please get me Western Union?
Okay.
Gee, that guy fights with everybody.
Especially on telephones.
Quiet, you two.
Here's your party.
It's about time. Hello? Western Meat Market. What's your order, please? I'd like a pound... Hey, wait a minute. I've got the wrong number. Operator. Operator.
Number, please.
Look, operator, this is Old Faithful talking. Now, if it's all right with you, I'd like to send a telegram.
Oh, you want Western Union?
Yes, and congratulations. This is the longest conversation since Cohen on the telephone. Now, look, operator, it's the last time I'm going to...
Hello, this is Western Union.
What?
This is Western Union.
Well, for heaven's sake, it's sure good to hear your voice. How are you?
Oh, hello, Joe. When did you get in town?
I'm sorry, miss, but I'm not Joe. Look, I want to send a wire to Fred Allen, New York City.
Oh, so that's the big mystery.
This ought to be good. Did you get the name, miss? Fred Allen.
Allen, how do you spell it?
A is an anteater, L is in liar, another L is in leech, E-N. Now, here's the message. Dear Mr. Allen, heard your program again last Wednesday, and this is your final warning.
Oh, did you hear him, too? I thought I'd die when he said Jack Benny was a male impersonator.
That's very funny. Now, take my message.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Allen, if you ever mention the name of Jack Benny again, the undersigned will personally come to New York and kick your new but unpaid-for teeth out. Have you got that?
Yeah.
Good. Sign it, the clutching hand. How much is that? Straight message.
Just a moment, please.
The clutching hand? Where did Jack get that name?
Oh, you know his rheumatism.
Quiet. Let's go back.
How much is it, miss? I haven't got all day.
That'll be $2.46 for a straight message.
Fine. Send it collect.
Thank you, Mr. Hand. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, that's that. Al'll never guess who sent that wire, and he'll be plenty scared. Oh, now what? Hello?
Hello, I got Western Union for you.
I just talked to Western Union. Young lady, how do you keep your job anyway?
Well, right now, I'm sitting on the boss's lap.
Oh. 800 telephone operators in this city, and I had to get her. I'm late, Don. You can introduce me now.
Okay, that was 1 o'clock jump played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that suave comedian, that sophisticated humorist, that clutching hand, Jack Benny.
Goes hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. Clutching Hand. Don, what's the matter with this gang anyway? Can't I even make a telephone call without everybody eavesdropping?
Well, Jack, it really wasn't my idea.
Oh, it wasn't? No, I thought of it. You know me. I'm just a spy at heart. Oh, you are? Well, listen, Matta Harris. I think spying is about as low a trick as any human being can possibly do.
You're right, Jack.
Certainly I'm right. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Clutch.
Oh, you too, huh? Well, you want to know something, Mary? You're nothing but a little snoop.
Well, at least I never sign a fake name to a telegram.
Yeah, where did you get that Clutching Hand stuff? Phil, it so happens that was my nickname when I was a kid. Everybody used to call me Clutching Hand Benny. Why? Because I never had a belt for my pants. That's why. Are you satisfied?
Well, I got the impression you were trying to scare Fred Allen. Did you hear him Wednesday night?
Yes, I heard him. Every week I get the same question.
Well, I tuned in last Wednesday, and I thought he was exceptionally amusing.
Amusing? Don, I've listened to seashells that were more entertaining than Allen. And another thing, to hear Allen talk, you'd think I was a weakling and a coward.
That's right, the Daily Double.
Why?
And you know, Jack, there isn't a week goes by that Allen doesn't mention how tight you are.
He says I'm tight. He's a fine one to talk. Any man that'll tar and feather his straw hat so he can wear it in the wintertime. Well.
No kidding, Jack. Is he really that stingy?
Stingy? You want to hear something, Don? I went over to his house one day and caught him painting cheese on mouse traps. Isn't that awful, Mary? Starving a poor little mouse.
Well, I never saw a fat one in your house.
Is that so? I've got several with double chins. Anyway, let's drop Alan. Talk about something a little more pleasant.
Well, speaking of something pleasant, I've some good news for you, Jack.
You have? What is it, Don?
Well, Phil tells me he's not going to leave our program after all.
Really? Why, Phil, what caused this sudden change in your plans?
Well, Jack, I thought the whole thing over. And after all, you've always been a regular guy with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a pretty sweet fellow to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And besides that, I had a little trouble with my sponsor.
Oh, I thought it was something like that. What happened between you and the Bubblegum King?
Well, just as we were signing a contract where I was to direct the 90-piece symphony orchestra, they threw a net over him.
Oh. I thought there was something crazy about that guy. Gee, Phil, didn't you suspect anything?
Well, no, I thought he was all right until one afternoon we'd just finished a rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And the sponsor said to me, "Can I take you home? I got my elephant waiting outside."
An elephant? He must have been batty. Say, Mary, you had lunch with him a couple of times. Didn't you notice he was nuts?
I'll say. He used to order fruitcake and laugh at us.
Well, Phil, all I can say is I hope you've learned a lesson and be satisfied to work for a nice fella like me. Oh, hello, Kenny.
Hiya, Jack. Say, Jack, you want to hear something funny?
What is it, Kenny?
I was in the restaurant across the street a few minutes ago, and you know they got a new waitress there.
Yeah?
So I ordered a cup of coffee, and then I got to talking to her.
Uh-huh.
And I finally made a date to take her out tonight. Oh, boy!
Well, what are you laughing at?
Boy, is she homely!
You certainly pick them, Kenny. So you dated her up, eh?
Yeah. And you know what her name is?
What?
Bucktooth Annie.
That's fine. Can you imagine that? Mary's going out with a girl that has buck teeth.
Well, he's got to hang his hat someplace, don't he?
That's right. Well, Kenny, now that you're all excited about your date, have you got a good song for us tonight?
Oh, sure. I got a pip.
Well, that's swell. Let's have it.
Okay. Oh, say, Jack, not changing the subject, but did you hear F.A. last Wednesday night?
Yes, I heard F.A., and I thought he was L.Z. Now, let's not bring that up again.
Well, gee, didn't you laugh when he said your arm looks like a buggy whip with fingers?
My arm looks like a buggy whip, eh? Well, he ought to know.
What do you mean, he ought to know?
Don, when you're riding behind a horse and you take the buggy whip in your hand and hit something, well, he ought to know. And now, Kenny, if you're ready, you may go ahead with your song. Wait a minute. Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
Right here, boy.
It's collect.
Okay.
Wait a minute, Mary. Don't touch it. That's from Fred Allen. Send it back, buddy. I refuse to accept it.
Well, I refuse to be surprised. Goodbye.
Well, Alan isn't going to catch me napping. Sing, Kenny. Imagine trying to hook me for a collect telegram. Please Come Out of Your Dream, sung by Kenny Baker, who never will. That was really beautiful, Kenny. Gee, some night I wish you'd sing 5 or 6 numbers on our program.
I better get 5 or 6 checks, too.
All right, Kenny, I was just paying you a compliment. What a gang. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight...
Some compliment.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to present our version... of Paramount's famous Chinese picture, Hop Along Cassidy. Now, I will play Hop, Mary will be Lung, and Kenny will... Pardon me, folks. Come in. Oh, it's you. Hello, Aubrey.
Hiya, Chief. Everything's okay outside. How's it going in here?
Oh, everything is fine, Aubrey. Just keep your eyes open, that's all.
I got you, Chief. Ready to go home now?
In a little while. Oh, fellas, this is my bodyguard, Aubrey Mulligan.
Your bodyguard?
Yes, I just hired him today.
My goodness, Jack, what do you need a bodyguard for?
Somebody's got to help him find his glasses.
That's not the only reason, Mary. I figured that Alan might send some thugs out here to get me, and I want to be ready.
Thugs, eh? Then you're not scared of Alan personally, is that it?
Listen, Phil, why should I be scared of a fella who's so frail that he has fainting spells at least 3 times a week?
Fainting spells?
Yes. You know how Alan talks through his nose. You think that's adenoids, don't you?
It is adenoids.
It is not. That obstruction in his nose is built in smelling salts. So the only reason I got Aubrey is for protection against Alan's henchmen. Aubrey, sit down here and wait till the program is over.
Okay. Hey, Chief, how about giving me a knockdown at a dame?
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is Mary Livingston.
Hiya, babe. What you doing tonight?
Nothing. You want to shoot some pool?
Mary, that isn't nice. Now, Aubrey, besides being a bodyguard, there are a couple of more things I want you to do for me, and they're very important. Oh, by the way, can you read?
In a pinch, Chief. In a pinch.
Well, wait a minute. I got to find out right now. Oh, Don, give him that piece of paper you got there, will you?
Okay.
Go ahead. Read it, Aubrey.
The whole thing?
Yeah, the whole thing. Go ahead.
Okay.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, as I started to announce before, tonight we are going to present... Pardon me, I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester talking.
Oh, what do you want?
A telegram just came to the house for you. $8.80 collect.
Well, don't accept it. That wire's from Fred Allen. He sent it to me for a gag.
Well, he must be laughing now. I paid for it.
Paid for it? Where did you get $8.80?
I ripped open the mattress and dipped into your reserve fund.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, stay away from there. Incidentally, I've been missing a lot of bills lately, so I wish you'd stop making my bed with a vacuum cleaner. Now, keep the telegram. I'll read it when I get home.
Okay.
Oh, now hop in the car and pick me up. I'll be ready in about 15 minutes.
I ain't going near that car, boss.
Why? What's the matter with it now?
Well, every time I step on the starter, the headlights change places.
Oh, are they doing that again? Well, what happens when you use the crank?
Coffee comes out.
Now, that's just a big lie. Well, never mind. I'll take a cab home.
Okay. So long, boss.
So long.
Oh, say, boss, I think you better come home right away.
Why? Is there anything wrong?
Well, there's a man been prowling around the house all day, and now he's in the backyard.
In the backyard? Oh, I get it. I'll be right home, Rochester. In the meantime, do something to keep that man there.
Shall I throw him some silverware?
No! I'll see you in a little while. Say, fellas, I'm going to run along now. Rochester tell me there's someone prowling around my backyard.
I bet Allen's got something to do with it.
That's what I think. Come on, Aubrey. Here's your chance.
Okay, Chief.
Wait a minute, Jack. I'm going with you.
Nothing doing, Mary. There might be some rough stuff, and you're liable to get hurt.
Go on. I can run as fast as you can.
Well, all right. Come on. Let's go, Aubrey.
Follow me, Chief. I'll take you home in my car.
Okay. Come on, Mary. Aubrey, I'm all in from this walking. It was a fine place for your car to run out of gas.
I'm sorry, Chief.
Gee, are you sure you ran out of gas, Aubrey? Gee, the gauge said full.
I said I was out of gas, didn't I?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
When you're out of gas, you're out of gas.
I know, but I wanted to get home in a hurry.
Oh, Jack, we've only got 5 more blocks.
5 more blocks? My feet are killing me. Say, Aubrey, why are we walking down such a dark street? Gee, the main boulevard is only 2 blocks away.
It's more romantic here.
Oh. Well, anyway, it's a beautiful night, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, say, Aubrey, I just happened to think I forgot to ask you for references.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Are you worried, Jack?
No, I'm not worried. I'm just tired.
Say, Jack, get a load of that tough-looking guy coming towards us.
Where? Oh, yes.
Hello, Mulligan.
Well, as I live and breathe, if it ain't the doctor.
Doctor?
Say, Chief, I'd like to have you meet a friend of mine, Dr. Thorndike.
Oh, glad to know you, Doctor. This is Mary Livingston.
Pleased to meet you.
How do you do?
Funny-looking doctor.
Are yous going our way, Doc?
Yeah, I find the night air most beneficial and suiting. So I might as well walk along with you guys.
Do you mind, Chief?
No, no, no. Come right along, Dr. Thorndike. Well, yes, sir. Do you live in this neighborhood, Doctor?
I ain't talking, buddy.
Oh. Well, what kind of a doctor are you?
He's a swell sergeant.
A surgeon?
Yeah, what's the matter? Don't you like it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Some of my best friends are surgeons.
Say, Jack, I don't think he's a doctor at all. Look at that bulge in his coat pocket.
Oh, that's just his handkerchief.
Well, it's got a trigger on it.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, this walk is very invigorating, isn't it?
It sure is.
Oh, Jack, here comes another guy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, well, if it ain't Aubrey Mulligan and Dr. Thorndike.
Hello, Professor Kingsley.
Professor?
Kingsley, yes.
Well, ain't this a coincidence? Oh, Professor, this is Jack Benny.
How do you do, Professor?
Hiya, buddy. Who's your skirt?
Just call me Livy the Lug.
Mary. Well, fellas, I hate to be rude, but I think I'll run ahead. I'm quite anxious to get home.
No, you don't, Chief. Hmm. Hey, Professor, you want to take a walk with us?
Sure. I find the night air most beneficial and soothing, so I might as well walk along with you guys.
Well, beautiful evening, isn't it, Professor Kingsley? Huh?
Yes, and nuts.
That's good, huh?
Say, Jack, get a load of the professor's cauliflower ears.
Well, maybe he teaches boxing. Who knows? Huh? Well, Aubrey, another couple of blocks and we'll be home. Safe and sound, huh, Aubrey?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Do you think it's dark enough here, Professor?
Well, what do you think, Doctor?
Why, Jack, it's okay.
Gee, it's swell, this night air, so beneficial and soothing. Isn't it, fellas?
Yeah. All right, buddy, stick him up.
What?
You hoard me up with your hands.
Why, Aubrey!
You can run along now, lady, and if you open your trap to anybody, we'll butt this here guy off.
Yeah, don't talk.
Okay. So long, fellas. Goodbye, Jack. I'll see you tomorrow if I don't talk.
All right, boys. All right, you put one over on me. All right, here's my dough. Now leave me alone.
Hey, that's a beautiful watch, ain't it, Aubrey?
Yeah. You take it, Doctor. I forgot to send you something for Christmas.
It's sentimental, fellas, anyway.
Shut up!
All right, boys. All right, you got my money and watch. Now, please, let me go.
Oh, no, we ain't taking no chances. Off with your pants.
My pants? Gee whiz, fellas, we're in Beverly Hills.
Grab hold of them, Doc. We'll rip them off.
Oh, Jack, come on.
Come on, fellas. Oh, my goodness, what's the matter with you guys?
Hey, fellas, get a load of your four legs.
Yeah. Darn you, I'm going to report you guys to the police.
Yeah, do that little thing. Come on, let's scram, fellas. So long, Chief.
Aubrey Mulligan, you're fired. It's a fine thing. Be out in the street here in my BVDs. Oh, well, I've only got another block to go, so I'll run home. Gee, I'm so embarrassed.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Barbara. Oh, my goodness, of all times to meet Barbara Stanwyck. Oh, Rochester! Rochester, open the door! Number of the 19th program in the new Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity of thanking all of my listeners, as well as the radio editors and critics throughout the United States and Canada, for the lovely tribute they paid the Jell-O program, members of my cast, and myself in the recent polls conducted by the New York World Telegram and the Radio Daily. So thanks again, folks, and good night.
This champion art is from the boys from Syracuse. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Henry Ford College Learning Lab is your central location for academic support.
They strive to assist students and faculty with techniques that are evidence-based and will increase your academic success. The Learning Lab offers in-person and online services to help you succeed. They offer tutorial assistance provided by faculty, professional, and student tutors, one-on-one academic assistance, including strategies for improving test taking and studying, workshops and presentations to classes or groups on strategies for learning success, study groups and review sessions on a variety of subjects, hands-on learning resources such as anatomical models in our bone room, computers, printing, copying, and scanning. For more information, please visit hfcc.edu/learnlab.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here at WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
Get out those old...
All right, we are rolling through another installment of Radio Vault. We've got another Jack Benny show on tap here. We just heard a broadcast originally heard back on February 5th, 1939. And we're going to hear the next consecutive episode in that series. The first appearance of Carmichael, the polar bear. Again, this show from February 12, 1939, Jack's birthday present, and once again, the first appearance of Carmichael the Polar Bear. As we roll through today's Radio Vault, don't forget, next hour, we will hear the Lux Radio Theater presentation of a show called Margie, based on the motion picture of the same name. That's our number three in today's Radio Vault. Thanks for being part of it all.
Get out those old...
All the ones about
records. Those old...
All the ones about
records. The ones we used to play so long ago.
On the old wind-up Victrola. Barney Google was great.
The tunes,
all the songs about Kate.
And especially jada, those jada, that boom, said I love you so.
Yuckahoola, hickey,
I used to beg you over and over,
darling, now
just
I'm
to
sunny.
Set the wedding day.
Meet me on
to
the back
get you portable,
songs,
I'd bring my portable
socks
and melt your heart away. With all those old,
they were wonderful records.
Those old,
play them over again.
Records, the ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
Listener supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Kenny Baker, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Sing My Heart. By the orchestra. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Tuesday being Valentine's Day and also Jack Benny's birthday, let us welcome our little Cupid with that old familiar greeting. Are you ready?
Happy birthday to you.
Birthday to me.
Well, hello again. This is Jack Benny talking, and folks, believe me, I am deeply touched. Don, wasn't that lovely the way our audience joined in on that greeting? Gosh, it was so spontaneous and sincere.
Huh? Yes, Jack, it certainly was.
I thought they were better when they rehearsed it.
Phil, I'm talking to Don. Well, Don, another year, another birthday. See, here it is, February again. You know, it's amazing how many prominent people were born in the month of February. And it made it pretty tough for me, too.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, with Washington and Longfellow and Lincoln, it's so hard for me to be outstanding. Really, it's been a terrific struggle.
I can imagine.
Of course, Don, I don't want you to think for a minute that I'm comparing myself to Lincoln or Washington.
Why not? Washington wore a wig, too.
Phil, I'm talking to Don. You know, Don, I will say that my father really thought I was going to grow up to be president.
Well, all fathers have great plans for their children. Why, my dad thought I was going to be a jockey.
A jockey? Well, he must have looked at you through the wrong end of a pair of binoculars. A jockey end.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Don't jump at conclusions. At the age of 17, I was nothing but skin and bones.
Well, those bones are certainly buried now. But you know, Don, getting back to my birthday, gee, the years come along so fast, I can hardly keep track of them.
Oh, they certainly do. Oh, by the way, Jack, how old will you be next Tuesday?
What was that, Don?
You heard him.
Phil, I'm talking to Don.
Well, I'm lonesome.
Well, why don't you join a lodge or something? What were you saying, Don?
I said, how old will you be next Tuesday?
Well, come on, Don. What would you say? Go ahead, give a guess. Huh?
Well, I don't know, Jack. I'd say somewhere between 34 and 37.
You would? Well, you didn't quite hit it, Don, but it was almost a bullseye.
There's bull in there somewhere.
Oh, brother. Listen, Phil, you're hardly in a position to make any cracks about my age. Those bags under your eyes are so big, your nose looks like a red cap.
It does, eh?
Yes, and get this. On my 75th birthday, I'll be able to go out on an all-night party, eat a Welsh rarebit with pickles, and on the way home get run over by a milk wagon and still look better than you do right now. So don't make any cracks about my age.
Jack's right, Phil. He can't be very old and have such nice rosy cheeks all the time.
It could be rouge, you know.
Rouge? Phil, I haven't had rouge on my cheeks since I played an Indian chief for Cecil B. DeMille. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Rain in the Face. Happy birthday.
Ugh, and thanks.
Say, Jack, I didn't know whether I'd see you Tuesday or not, so here, I brought you a birthday present.
Oh, that's swell, Mary, but really, you shouldn't have bought me anything for me.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, it makes Phil and Don look so awfully cheap. You know, huh?
Well, Jack, I was going to get you something, but after all, you have everything.
Oh, I can excuse you, Don, but Phil saw me in the locker room at the country club yesterday, and he knows darn well I need underwear.
Was that your underwear? I cleaned my golf clubs with it.
Oh, you did, eh?
Hey, are you going to open my present or not?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary. You bet I'm going to, and right now. Imagine cleaning his clubs with my... Well, I'll be darned. Look, fellas, a silk necktie. Gee, thanks, Mary.
You like it?
I'll say, what a lovely color. But what's that little thing crawling around the bottom?
A silkworm. The tie isn't finished yet.
Oh, well, he's going like 60, so it won't be long now. Thanks again, Mary.
And that isn't all. I also wrote a special birthday poem for you.
A poem, too? Well, hit me on the head and clip my tongue. A birthday poem.
Yeah. Say, Jack, how old are you anyway?
Well, how old do you think I am?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Well, go ahead and guess.
Okay. 30?
No.
31?
No.
32?
No.
48?
Shut up! Be a long time, Mary, before I'm 48. Now, let's hear your poem. What's the title of it?
Mary Livingston's Ode to Jack Benny by Mary Livingston.
Oh, you mentioned me, too, didn't you? Well, go ahead, Mary.
Okay. Oh, Jack Benny, oh, Jack Benny, you've had birthdays, but how many? Is it 21 or more, or twice that much, and more and more? Years ago in old Waukegan, in the state of Illinois, a child was born into the Bennies, and it wasn't Myrna Loy.
Well, of course not, Myrna Loy.
'Twas a boy, they called him Jackie, and even then he looked quite wacky.
Wacky?
And the good old stork who brought him there shot himself with a revolver.
Now, Mary, that wasn't his attitude at all.
Quiet. No. I see you, Jack, at the age of 2, with golden curls and eyes of blue.
That's right.
And then I see you 3 years old, with silver threads among the gold.
Mary, now how could I have gray hair at the age of 3?
You didn't live right and you know it.
All right, now grow me up and finish this.
Okay. At 12, you said you'd run away unless the fiddle you could play. And when you got one, what do you think? Were you good or did you tink?
Tink?
Yeah, baby talk.
Oh. Well, Mary, this next verse better be the last.
It is.
Oh.
Oh, Jack Benny, oh, Jack Benny, you've had birthdays, but how many? So happy returns and all good wishes from us and Jell-O, so delicious. The end.
Mary, that poem was so good, I'm afraid to follow it with anything verbal. So, Phil, how about an orchestra number?
Wait a minute, Jack. I can't find my baton.
Your baton? Can't you lead without it?
It's not that. I got something in my tooth. Oh.
Well, go ahead. I'll look around for it. Hold it a minute. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I'd like to take this opportunity of wishing you a happy birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And may life grow sweeter as the years roll by.
Well, thank you very much. Now, tell me, who are you?
Just a bunion in the march of time. Goodbye.
You know, folks, I'll bet he has more fun than anybody. Play, Phil. Number called I Better Get Some Shut-Eye, played by Phil Harris, who certainly looks it. You know, folks, Phil never gets to bed. He's what I'd call one sleepy people. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Wait a minute, Jack. I resent that vitriolically.
Vitriolically? Well, some stuff. Why, Phil, you're not only using the word wrong, but you don't even know what it means.
I do, too. I got it from my guitar player, didn't I, Frankie?
Yeah, I learned you a lot of things.
That's what I thought. Phil, there isn't one man in your orchestra that can handle a word of over 2 syllables.
Is that so? Well, for your information, all the boys in my band went through college.
Well, they didn't get any on them. Vitriolically. Why, I don't even know what it means. Oh, you couldn't. Well, how could you use the word vitriolically?
That I wouldn't know.
I see, and very clever, Don. Well, so much for our English lesson. And now going from the sublime to Kenny Baker. Say, hey, Kenny, you're a little late. Huh?
I couldn't help it, Jack. I stopped in the store to buy you a birthday present. Here you are, a nice box of candy.
Oh, well, thanks. Hey. Well, gee, I'm going to sample one of these right now. Huh? It was sweet of you to remember me, Kenny, but, gee, you didn't have to buy me anything.
That's what you said last year, and you twisted my wrist.
Oh, Kenny, I was only clowning, you know. Say, gosh, look at this. Say, these are the biggest pieces of candy I've ever seen. What are they, anyway?
Chocolate-covered bananas.
Chocolate-covered bananas? Well, that's something new. Here, have one, Don.
Well, thanks, Jack, but I'm cutting down on sweets.
Oh, how about you, Phil?
No, thanks, I'm not a bit hungry.
Mary?
No, thanks, I'm not a bit crazy.
Well, Kenny, looks like you and I'll have to eat the whole box.
I'm game.
So am I.
That's a suicide pact if I ever heard one.
That's right. Let's forget the whole thing. Well, Kenny, how about a song?
Okay, I've got one for you. Oh, say, Jack.
Yes?
Did you hear Fred Allen I Panna You Wednesday night?
No, and I'm not interested. Now, go ahead with your song.
Boy, he sure tore into you.
Yeah. He said your feet were so flat, your socks bagged at the arches.
Well, Phil, I'm not even going to answer him. After all, the man is in bad shape. You know, he's so weak and anemic, and on top of that, his blood circulation is so poor, it's really pathetic.
Alan has poor blood circulation, huh?
Poor? Don, 10 years ago, a rattlesnake bit him on the ankle, and the poison has yet to reach his knee. On the square, fellas, he hasn't got any more pulse than a snowman. The whole thing is really pitiful. Go ahead with your song, Kenny.
Okay.
Say, Jack, whatever became of that rattlesnake that bit Fred Allen?
It was knighted, Mary. And now, Kenny, you may sing. Now, hold it a minute. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Yes, yes, what do you want?
I got something to ask you, but first I want to wish you a happy birthday.
Thanks, Rochester, but my birthday isn't until Tuesday.
I know, but that's my payday, and we always argue.
All right, now, what was it you wanted to ask me?
Say, boss, do we know any Eskimos?
Eskimos? Of course we don't know any Eskimos.
Okay, so long.
So long. Hey, Rochester, wait a minute. What made you ask me if we know any Eskimos?
Well, boss, a big box just came for you. It said happy birthday on it.
Yes?
And when I opened it, there was a polar bear inside.
A polar bear? Oh, it can't be a real bear. It must be a rug.
That's what I thought till it slapped me down.
You mean you let that bear loose in my house? Where is he now?
He's in the bathroom taking a cold shower.
In my bathroom, Rochester, you go right in there and get him out.
Boss, I wouldn't go in there well-armed, tired of living, and directly behind Frank Buck.
Oh, this sounds fantastic to me. Rochester, I'll bet this whole thing is nothing but a figment of your imagination. What's that?
The figment wants a towel.
Oh, my goodness.
What am I going to do with this bear anyway?
Put him back in the crate and have the cook look up some recipes. I bet Fred Allen had something to do with this. Well, Rochester, keep your eye on him. I'll be home in about half an hour.
Okay, boss. I got to run along now. There's something breathing on my neck.
What?
Wait till I look around. Yep, that's it. So long, boss.
Can you imagine that?
What's the matter, Jack?
Plenty is the matter. There's a polar bear loose in my house.
I told you you should have put in a furnace.
Yeah, that would be a big help. Sing, Kenny. Say, Mary, I wonder how much it would cost to send an alligator to New York.
I don't
know. Thanks for everything, every word, every sigh, every kiss. Thanks for everything, for bringing me moments like this, for taking the skies of gray and making them blue, for taking my cares away. I tip my heart to you. So thanks for everything, every thrill in your tender caress. Thanks to you alone for all that I'll ever possess. You gave me my reason to dream, then made every dream come true. And so for everything, my thanks. Nothing in the world I wouldn't do to be worthy of you. For any time that I am ever blue, you come smiling through. You're my sunny day, you're my only inspiration. Here's all that I can say to show you my appreciation. So thanks for everything, every thrill in your tender caress. Thanks to you alone for all that I'll ever possess. You gave me my reason to dream, and made every dream come true. And so for everything, I give my thanks.
Thanks for Everything, sung by Kenny Baker. And Kenny, for finesse and feeling and delicacy of tone, you are definitely preeminent among young American tenors.
Gee, ain't I something?
Yes, and I wish I could tell you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, in honor of Valentine's Day next Tuesday, tonight, the Benny Art and Bingo Players will present a romantic little drama about an old maid entitled Love Finds Annie Hardy. Or It's About Time. Now,
am I going to be Annie?
No, Mary. I hired a genuine old maid for the part. Where are you, Miss Mildew? I mean, Miss Muldew. Where are you?
Right here. Where's my man? Yahoo!
Control yourself, Miss Muldew. Now, in this drama, I will be Annie's paw, Mary will be her maw, and Don, Phil, and Kenny will be rivals for Annie's hand.
Oh, no.
Count me out. So long, Jack.
Come back here, all of you. Don't worry, Annie. We'll hook one of them.
I hope I get the fat one. Yahoo!
Why, Don, you're blushing. Anyhow, the locale of our play is the thriving little town of Off Center, Indiana. As the scene opens, we find Maw and Paw seated in the parlor of the little love nest they built 50 years ago. Curtain. Music.
Love, your magic spell is everywhere.
tum, 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 tum. Well, Ma, here it is Valentine's Day, and the air is full of romance.
It is, eh?
Yep.
Well, open the window and let it out.
Oh, come on, Ma. This being Valentine's Day, how about a little kiss?
Get away from me, you old fool.
Okay, I couldn't find your lips and all those wrinkles anyhow. Ow! I was only joking, Ma.
This is no time for jokes. Our daughter Annie is 40 years old and she ain't married yet.
Well, she'd have been married long ago, wasn't for her hay fever.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, the fellas can hear her wheezing a block away and she can't sneak up on them. You sent her down to the beauty parlor to get a mud pack like I told you to?
Yeah, but she had one last year and it was no good.
Why not?
After 3 days, the darn mud wore off.
Oh.
She's the homeliest gal I ever seen.
Well, like mother, like daughter. Ouch, stop hitting me. If I wasn't petrified, I'd be black and blue.
Speaking of Annie, what's the idea of getting her all dressed up today?
Well, I got a scheme, Ma. There's only three single fellas left in town, ain't they?
Yep. There's Tubby Wilson, Daffy Baker, and Twitch Harris.
That's right. I invited all three of them up here today, and it's our job to get one of them to marry our daughter.
How do you know they'll show up?
Hee-hee, I told them you were going to do a fan dance. All's fair in love and war. I bet that's one of the boys now. Pull your bustle up, Ma.
That's the footstool.
Oh. Come in.
Howdy, folks.
Well, if it ain't Twitch Harris. Hiya, Twitch.
Finer than silk. What's on your mind, Zeke?
Got an important question to ask you. Here, have a glass of cider first. That'll get him, Ma.
Cider? Hey, wait a minute. This stuff ain't intoxicating.
It better be.
Quiet, Ma. Say, Twitch, I don't want to seem personal, but have you ever thought of marrying a girl and settling down?
If you're referring to that lop-eared daughter of yours, no.
Now, hold on, Twitch. Have you seen Annie since she got her new teeth?
Yeah, I went to the preview.
Well, she may not be the prettiest gal in town, but she's smart and stylish. You know, she got her hair up.
Up where?
Upstairs.
Keep quiet, Ma. We gotta get our daughter married.
Say, Zeke, I thought you were going to raffle Annie off.
I tried to, but I couldn't sell any tickets, so I changed it to a duck.
A duck? That's cheating.
It is not. She walks like one.
Barry, I wish you'd shut up. You're cramping my style.
Gosh, I bet that's Annie now. Let me out of here.
Quick, Harris, get away from that window.
So long, folks.
Doggone that low-down Harris. He stole my jug.
Don't get excited, Pa. You can get another jug.
Yeah, but where the heck can I get another finger? Doggone it. Well, Ma, let's see if we can land the next one. Come in.
Good evening, folks.
Well, well. Look, Ma, it's Tubby Wilson.
Hello, Tubby. Have some chairs and sit down.
Yeah.
What's up, Zeke?
Tubby, how'd you like to marry my daughter Annie?
Annie?
Hold him, all.
I got him. I got him, Pa. I got him.
Let go of me, old bat, and put your glasses on. Well, that's two strikes, but we ain't out yet. Come in.
Hello, everybody.
Well, it's young Baker. Son, I'll make it short and snappy. How'd you like to get married?
I don't know. Was it fun?
Ain't nothing like it, my boy. How'd you like to tie up with my Annie?
Gosh, I couldn't do that.
Hold on now. Just give me one reason why you don't want to marry my daughter.
She frightens me.
We'll get used to her. Now listen, Baker, if you take her for your bride, I'll treat you both to a honeymoon at Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls? Can I push her in?
That's up to you, my boy. What I don't see don't hurt me.
That's right. Just get her out of the house.
Yes, sirree.
Okay, it's a deal.
Come in, come in. Oh, it's you. Hello, Annie.
Hello, Pa. Hello, Ma.
Back from the beauty parlor already?
Yep. How do I look?
If you didn't pay your bill, don't.
I got good news for you, gal. Young Baker here has consented to make the supreme sacrifice. He's going to marry you.
And I got good news for you, too. I already got myself a husband.
A husband? Jehoshaphat.
Jeepers creepers.
So you're married, eh? Well, where is he?
Out on the porch. Come on in, mister.
Mister? Gosh, there ain't much to him, is there, Ma?
Well, he's a man. That's more than we expected.
That's right.
Hello, everybody.
Come in, young feller, and congratulations.
What for?
Say, if you don't mind my asking a personal question, how'd you come to marry my daughter anyway?
Well, I'm a traveling salesman. I was just getting off the train when this girl grabbed me and put my cedar right in the Cedar Foster straight away, basically. And I didn't know whether framing Cedar Foster's feet or not, sister, to me. You brought a seat right beside the Cedar Foster's friend or bought this bed. And here I am.
Oh, she took you off your guard, eh?
Yeah, and not only that. You know, the Cedar Foster tournaments, they were free for Foster's for free feet. I don't want a private Cedar Foster's for a room. The salary for Foster's for a Foster's feet. Foster, what do I do?
Too late to do anything, young man. You're hooked just like I was. Ouch, Playfield. The last number of the 20th program in the new Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. And oh yes, I'd like to take this opportunity of congratulating Boy Scouts and their leaders everywhere on their 29th birthday anniversary of Scouting in America. You know, Mary, I used to be a Boy Scout when I was a kid.
And now someone has to help you across the street.
They do not. Good night, folks.
J-E-L-L
appears on the Jell-O program for courtesy of Mervyn LeRoy Productions. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
As life starts moving faster and faster, we need to make a choice. To move faster with it, or to step off every now and then to marvel at the wonders around us. To take in new sights and sounds, songs and experiences, and to just remember how beautiful life can be. Let's take a deep breath and remember that each Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., there's Afternoon Jazz with Mr. Jags. Basking in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon, a place where this season we can all savor the moment and take a deep breath of pure jazz. Your journey begins on 89.3 WHFR.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
This is Helen Hayes, and this is a simple story about actors. I guess I know pretty much about actors because I've been one for 50 years.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, the Helen Hayes Drama Group and Helen Hayes present Lovers, Villains, and Fools. Helen Hayes has been known for years as one of the leading actresses of the American stage, and lately as a New York theater. And now on tape, Miss Hayes.
Thank you. I still haven't become accustomed to being a theater. But after all these years inside of theaters, I'm quite at home when talking about actors and acting. As I said a moment ago, this is a story about actors. Throughout history, strange opinions have been held about actors by people outside the profession, people sometimes known to theater folk as civilians. Actors have been accused of being childlike, vain, feather-brained, irresponsible, and, well, sometimes not even quite respectable. But whatever else they are, actors are artists. They work hard to learn their trade. It isn't easy to be called on to be a lover for one instant and a villain the next, and then turn from being a villain into a fool. And so an actor reaches for Shakespeare, whose plays provide him with all the examples of character he will ever need, no matter whatever or wherever he plays. Tonight, Jack Manning, my young actor friend, has brought our group to the studio with a Shakespearean repertoire of lovers, villains, and fools. And it might be wise to begin foolishly with a fool. The actor will be Dick Vere, reading a speech of Launce, a foolish fellow and two gentlemen of Verona. Launce is the clownish servant of Proteus, one of the two gentlemen. He is especially appreciated for his soliloquies to his dog, Crab, the sourest-natured dog that lives. The stage direction, enter Launce, leading a dog.
Oh, when a man's servant shall play the cur with him, look you, it goes hard. One that I brought up of a puppy. One that I saved from drowning when three or four of his blind brothers and sisters went to it. I have taught him, as you might say, precisely. Thus I would teach a dog. I was sent to deliver him as a present to Mistress Sylvia from my master. And I came no sooner into the dining chamber, but he steps me to her trencher and steals her capon's leg. Oh, 'tis a foul thing when a cur cannot keep himself in all companies. If I had not had more wit to take a fault upon me that he did, I think verily he'd have been hanged for it. Sure as I live, he'd have suffered for it. You shall judge. He thrust me himself into the company of three or four gentlemanlike dogs under the Duke's table. He'd not been there, bless the mark, but all the chamber smelt him. Out with the dog, says one. Whew. What cur is that, says another. Whip him out, says a third.
Hang him up, says the Duke.
Well, I, having been acquainted with the smell before, knew it was Crab. And goes me to the fellow that whips the dogs. Friend, quoth I, do you mean to whip the dog?
Aye, marry I do, quoth he.
You do him the more wrong, quoth I. 'Twas I did the thing you wot of. He makes me no more ado, but whips me out of the chamber. How many masters would do this for their servant? Oh, thou thinkest not on this now. Nay, I remember the trick thou served me when I took my leave of Madam Sylvia. Did I not bid thee still mark me and do as I do? When didst thou ever see me heave up my leg against a gentlewoman's farthingale? Didst thou ever see me do such a trick?
Certain people may think it's easy for an actor to play a fool because they fondly believe that an actor is a fool to begin with. Well, is he really? Certainly an actor does his work earnestly and honestly. Mr. J.B. Priestley, the author, has this to say. I prefer acting that I see in the theater, says Mr. Priestley, to acting that I see in the Harley Street Consulting Room, in the law courts, or the Houses of Parliament. The man who openly plays a character part for 2 hours a night is more likely to remain in a healthy state of mind than the man who plays a character part day and night, using every room he enters as his stage. So much for who is the fool. Now in Twelfth Night, Shakespeare tells a story of lovers and demonstrates his fondness for disguising his heroine as a boy, thus fooling a lovesick swain. Joseph Warren plays the Duke, and Terry Clark plays Viola.
give me some music. Come, the song we had last night. Mark it, Cesario. It is old and plain. The spinsters and the knitters in the sun and the free maids that weave their thread with bones do used to chant it. It is silly, sooth, and dallies with the innocence of love, like the old age. Come hither, boy. How dost thou like this tune?
It gives a very echo to the seat where love is throned.
Thou dost speak masterly. My life upon it, young though thou art, thine eye hath stayed upon some favor that it loves. Hath it not, boy?
A little, by your favor.
What kind of woman is't?
Of your complexion.
She is not worth thee, then. What years, i'faith?
About your years, my lord.
Too old, by heaven. Let thy love be younger than thyself, or thy affection cannot hold the bent. For women are as roses whose fair flower, being once displayed, doth fall that very hour.
And so they are. Alas, that they are so, to die even when they to perfection grow.
Once more, Cesario, get thee to yon same sovereign cruelty.
But if she cannot love you, sir.
I cannot be so answered.
Oh, sooth, but you must. Say that some lady, as perhaps there is, hath for your love as great a pang of heart as you have for Olivia. You cannot love her, you tell us, so must she not then be answered?
There is no woman's sides can bide the beating of so strong a passion as love doth give my heart.
Aye, but I know.
What dost thou know?
Too well what love women to men may owe. In faith, they are as true of heart as we. My father had a daughter, loved a man. As might be, perhaps, were I a woman, I should your lordship.
And what's her history?
A blank, my lord. For she never told her love. But let concealment, like a worm in the bud, feed on her damask cheek. She pined in thought, and with a green and yellow melancholy, she sat like patience on a monument, smiling at grief. Was not this love indeed? Oh, we men may say more, swear more, but indeed our shows are more than will, for still we prove much in our vows, but little in our love.
But died thy sister of her love, my boy?
I am all the daughters of my father's house. And all the brothers, too, and yet I know not. Sir, shall I to this lady?
Aye, that's the theme. To her in haste. Give her this jewel. Say, my love can give no place. Bide no denay.
The players who are illustrating this story about actors are all young. They're all artists, and they all make their living by acting on stage, screen, radio, or television. They formed their group because they felt a desperate need to learn their craft well by working. And they chose to study and perform Shakespeare because Shakespeare is the one dramatist who challenges every mood, every skill, and every emotion. Being human beings as well as actors, there are lovers among these young people, I'm certain of that, and there may be a fool or two. But I'm sure that there are no out-and-out villains. Actors leave pure villainy to the drama critics, but they can quickly assume the villain's sneer when the part calls for it. Villainous roles such as Gloucester in King Henry VI, Part II. Jack Manning is Gloucester, the man who can smile and murder while he smiles.
Aye. Edward will use women honorably. Would he were wasted, marrow, bones, and all, that from his loins no hopeful branch may spring to cross me from the golden time I look for. And yet, between my soul's desire and me, the lustful Edward's title buried, is Clarence Henry. and his son, young Edward, and all the unlooked-for issue of their bodies to take their rooms ere I can place myself. A cold premeditation for my purpose. Why then, I do but dream on sovereignty. Say there is no kingdom then for Richard. What other pleasures can the world afford? I'll make my heaven in a lady's lap, and deck my body in gay ornaments, and witch sweet ladies with my words and looks. Miserable thought. And more unlikely than to accomplish 20 golden crowns. My love forswore me in my mother's womb. She did corrupt frail nature with some bribe to shrink mine arm up like a withered shrub, to make an envious mountain on my back where sits deformity to mock my body, to shape my legs of an unequal size, to disproportion me in every part like to a chaos or an unlicked bear whelp that carries no impression like the dam. And am I, then, a man to be beloved? A monstrous fault to harbor such a thought. Then, since this earth affords no joy to me but to command, to check, to o'erbear such as are of better person than myself, I'll make my heaven to dream upon the crown. And whiles I live, to account this world but hell, until my misshaped trunk that bears this head be round impaled with a glorious crown. And yet, I know not how to get the crown, for many lives stand between me and home, and I, like one, lost in a thorny wood that rends the thorns and is rent with the thorns, seeking a way and straying from the way, not knowing how to find the open air, but toiling desperately to find it out, torment myself to catch the English crown. And from that torment I will free myself or hew my way out with a bloody axe. Why, I can smile and murder whiles I smile and cry content to that which grieves my heart and wet my cheek with artificial tears and frame my face to all occasions. I can add color to the chameleon, change shapes with Proteus for advantages, and set the murderous Machiavel to school. Can I do this and cannot get a crown? Tut, were it further off, I'll pluck it down. This is Jack Manning. In Shakespeare, as in life, we find lovers who are villains. And by being villains are fools indeed. Here are Macbeth and his lady passionately plotting the death of Duncan. Barbara Joyce as Lady Macbeth and Douglas Gordon as Macbeth.
Oh, now, what news?
He has almost supped. Why have you left the chamber?
Have they asked for me?
Know you not, he has.
We will proceed no further in this business. He hath honored me of late, and I have bought golden opinions from all sorts of people, which would be worn now in their newest gloss, not cast aside so soon.
Was the hope drunk wherein you dressed yourself? Hath it slept since? And wakes it now to look so green and pale at what it did so freely? From this time such I account thy love. Art thou afeard to be the same in thine own act and valor as thou art in desire? Wouldst thou have that which thou esteemest the ornament of life and live a coward in thine honesty?
Really, peace! I dare do all that may become a man. Who dares do more is none.
What beast was it then that made you break this enterprise to me? When you durst do it, then you were a man. And to be more than what you were, You would be so much more the man.
If we should fail.
We fail! But screw your courage to the sticking place, and we'll not fail. When Duncan is asleep, whereto the rather shall his day's hard journey soundly invite him, his two chamberlains will I with wine and wassail so convince that memory, the warder of the brain, shall be a fume, and the receipt of reason a limbeck only, when in swinish sleep their drenched natures lie as in a death, what cannot you and I perform on the unguarded Duncan?
Bring forth men, children only, for thine undaunted metal should compose nothing but males. Will it not be received, when we have marked with blood those sleepy two of his own chamber, and used their very daggers that they have done?
Who dares receive another, as we shall make our griefs and clamor roar upon his death?
I'm settled. And bend up each corporal agent to this terrible feat. Away. Mark the time with fairest show. False face must hide what the false heart doth know.
The greatest ambition of all actors is to play Hamlet, and our acting group is no less ambitious than others. So the climax of our story about actors will be a scene from this greatest play of all, a drama that's a treasure house of lovers, villains, and fools. Appropriately for this working group, the scene opens with Shakespeare's instructions to actors young and old in all lands, in all ages. We know it as Hamlet's advice to the players.
Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue.
But if you mouth it, as many of your players do, I had as lief the town crier spoke my lines. Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who, for the most part, are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise. Pray you, avoid it.
I warrant, Your Honor.
Be not too tame, neither, but let your own discretion be your tutor. Suit the action to the word to the action. With this special observance, the purpose of playing, both at the first and now, was and is, to hold, as 'twere, the mirror up to nature, to show virtue her own feature, scorn his own image, and the very age and body of the time his form and pressure. Oh, there be players that I have seen play, and heard others praise, and that highly, have so strutted and bellowed, that I have thought some of nature's journeymen had made men, and not made them well, they imitated humanity so abominably.
I hope we have reformed that indifferently with us, sir.
Oh, reform it altogether. And let those that play your clowns speak no more than is set down for them. For there be of them that will themselves laugh, to set on some quantity of barren spectators to laugh too. Though, in the meantime, some necessary question of the play be then to be considered. That's villainous. And shows a most pitiful ambition in the fool that uses it. Go, make you ready. What ho, Horatio?
Here, sweet lord, at your service.
Horatio, there is a play tonight before the king. One scene of it comes near the circumstance which I have told thee of my father's death. I prithee, when thou seest that act afoot, even with the very comment of thy soul, observe my uncle. Give him heedful note. For I, mine eyes, will rivet to his face, and after, we will both our judgments join in censure of his seeming.
Well, my lord, if he steal aught the whilst this play is playing and escape detecting, I will pay the theft.
They are coming to the play. I must be idle. Get you a place.
How fares our cousin Hamlet?
Excellent of faith. I eat the air, promise crammed. You cannot feed capons so.
I have nothing with this answer, Hamlet. These words are not mine.
No, nor mine now. Be the players ready.
Aye, my lord. They stay upon your patience.
Come hither, my dear Hamlet. Sit by me.
No, good mother. Here's metal more attractive.
You are merry, my lord.
Why?
Aye, my lord.
Oh, God, you're only jig maker. What should a man do but be merry? For look you, how cheerfully my mother looks. And my father died within his 2 hours.
Nay, 'tis twice 2 months, my lord.
So long? Oh, heavens, died 2 months ago and not forgotten yet. Well, then there's hope a great man's memory may outlive his life half a year. Come, the play.
Enter a king and queen very lovingly. The queen embracing him and he her. She kneels and makes sure of protestation unto him. He takes her up and declines his head upon her neck, lays him down upon a bank of flowers. She, seeing him asleep, leaves him.
Madam, how like you this play?
The lady doth protest too much, methinks.
Ah, but she'll keep her word.
Have you heard the argument? Is there no offense in it?
No, no, they do but jest. Poison in jest. No offense of the world.
What do you call the play?
The Mousetrap. This play is the image of a murder done in Vienna. You shall see anon. 'Tis a knavish piece of work. But what of that? Your Majesty and we that have free souls, it touches us not. Come the play.
Anon comes in a fellow, takes off the king's crown, kisses it, and pours poison in the king's ears and exits. The queen returns, finds the king dead, and makes passionate action. The poisoner woos the queen with gifts. She seems loath and unwilling a while, but in the end accepts his love.
The king rises.
What, frightened with false fire?
Affairs, my lord.
Give all the play.
Give me some light. Away.
Light, light,
light.
Light, light.
Good Horatio.
Aye, my lord.
I'll take the ghost's word for £1,000. Didst perceive?
Very well, my lord.
Upon the talk of the poisoning.
I did very well note him.
Leave me, Horatio. 'Tis now the very witching time of night, when churchyards yawn and hell itself breathes out contagion to this world. Now could I drink hot blood and do such bitter business as the day would quake to look on. Soft. Now to my mother. O heart, lose not thy nature. Let not ever the soul of Nero enter this firm bosom. Let me be cruel, not unnatural. I will speak daggers to her, but use none.
Hamlet, thou hast thy father much offended.
Mother, you have my father much offended.
Come, come, you answer with an idle tongue.
Go, go, you question with a wicked tongue.
Why, how now, Hamlet?
What's the matter now?
Have you forgot me?
No, by the rood, not so. You are the queen, your husband's brother's wife. And would 'twere not so, you are my mother.
Nay, then, I'll set those to you who can speak.
Come, sit you down. You shall not budge. You go not till I set you up a glass where you may see the inmost part of you.
What wilt thou do? Thou wilt not murder me.
Leave wringing your hands. Peace, sit you down. And let me wring your heart. For so I shall, if it be made of penetrable stuff. If damned custom have not brazed it so that it is proof and bulwark against sense.
What have I done that thou darest wag thy tongue and noise so rude against me?
Look here, upon this picture and on this, the counterfeit presentment of two brothers. See what a grace was seated on this brow. A combination and a form indeed, where every god did seem to set his seal to give the world assurance of a man. This was your husband. Look you now what follows. Here is your husband, like a mildewed ear, blasting his wholesome brother. Have you eyes? Oh, shame. Where is thy blush?
No, Hamlet, speak no more. These words like daggers into in mine ears. No more, sweet Hamlet.
A murderer and a villain, a slave that is not 20th part the tithe of your precedent lord.
No more!
A king of shreds and patches.
I am thy father's ghost.
Save me, and hover over me with your wings, you heavenly gods. What would your gracious figure?
Alas, he's mad.
Do you not come, your tardy son, to chide that lapsed in time and passion lets go by the important acting of your dread command? Oh, say.
Do not forget, this visitation is but to whet thine almost blunted purpose. But look, amazement on thy mother sits. Oh, step between her and her fighting soul. Conceit in weakest bodies strongest works. Speak to her, Hamlet.
How is't with you, lady?
Alas, how is't with you? That you do bend your eye on vacancy, and with the incorporeal air do hold discourse. Whereon do you look?
On him, look you, how pale he glares.
To whom do you speak this?
Do you see nothing there?
Nothing at all. Yet all there is I see.
Now, did you nothing hear?
No. Nothing but ourselves.
Why, look you there. Look how it steals away. My father in his habit as he lived. Look where he goes even now, out at the portal.
This is the very coinage of your brain. This bodiless creation, ecstasy, is very cunning in.
Ecstasy? Mother, for love of grace, lay not that flattering unction to your soul that not your trespass but my madness speaks. Confess yourself to heaven. Repent what's past, avoid what is to come, and do not spread the compost on the weeds to make them rancor.
Oh, Hamlet, thou hast cleft my heart in twain.
Throw away the worser part, and live the purer with the other half. Good night. But go not to my uncle's bed. Refrain tonight, and that shall lend a kind of easiness to the next abstinence, the next more easy. Once more, good night. And when you are desirous to be blessed, I'll blessing beg of you. Good night.
Good night, Hamlet.
Good night, Mother.
This has been a story about actors and actors at work. Our revels now are ended. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Good night, everyone.
The CBS Radio Workshop has presented the Helen Hayes Drama Group with Helen Hayes on tape in Lovers, Villains, and Fools, produced and directed by Paul Roberts. Narration was written by Albert Miller. Music composed and conducted by Alexander Steinert. Heard with Miss Hayes were Jack Manning, Dick Via, Barbara Joyce, Joe Warren, Terry Clark, Douglas Gordon, Betty Ellen, and Arthur Anderson. This is Bob Hite inviting you to join us again next week when, from Hollywood, we present a delightful and thrilling fairy tale by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry called The Little Princess. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This is Missy J, and I am inviting you to a new day and a new time, Thursdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. We still have the same vibe, bringing you New Jack Swing, Soul, R&B, Jazz, and we end with Gospel. So won't you tune in to the station that makes waves while we branch out farther into the community with good music, vital information for the mind, body, and soul. WHFR 89.3.FM on your dial.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. Cars are an important investment, and you have the power to protect it. Remove valuables from your car or place out of view. Roll up your windows completely. Don't leave your car running while unattended, especially during the winter. And always lock your doors and take your keys or fob with you. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
This is a public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Listeners supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Lux presents Hollywood.
Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Gene Crane and Glenn Langan in Margie. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. For me, and I think probably for you, the memories of high school are the gayest, pleasantest, and most nostalgic of all. And tonight, in that nostalgic vein, we take you back to 1928, a year of raccoon coats, flagpole sitters, miniature golf, and rumble seat romances. A crazy, colorful, romantic period that forms the backdrop of our play, from 20th Century Fox's screen hit, Margie. You'll meet the original stars, Gene Crane as Margie, and Glenn Langan, one of Hollywood's most promising young leading men, in his first appearance on our stage. It's curtain time, and here's Act One of Margie, starring Gene Crane in the title role, and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine, with Jane Darwell as Grandma, and Barbara Lawrence as Mary Bell.
Days are never blue.
It's a rainy Saturday afternoon, and in the attic of a pleasant little house in a pleasant little town, a young mother and her teenage daughter are rummaging through a dusty collection of trunks and boxes. The daughter has discovered an old phonograph and a carton of records.
Can you imagine, Mother? The phonograph actually still works.
Well, after all, dear, it's not quite an antique yet.
You used to have to wind this thing every time you wanted to play a record?
Oh, we put up with a lot of hardships in those days. My goodness, will you look at these?
Well, what are they?
Just an old pair of bloomers I used to wear when I was about your age.
Gee, they're hideous. I mean, well, they're so bulky.
Well, they were quite a problem now and then.
Mother, tell me all about the crazy and idiotic things you did when you were my age.
Well, I went to Central High School just like you were doing.
Well, tell me about it. Tell me about some simply terrific event that happened in your life.
Well, I'm not so sure a terrific event in 1928 will seem so terrific to you in 1947.
Oh, Mother, now you're just being difficult.
Well, let's look at my old photograph album. Now, here, this is a picture of Johnny Green.
What's that thing he's wearing?
Why, a raccoon coat, of course. He was the only boy in school with a raccoon coat and a Stutz Blackhawk.
A what?
It was a kind of automobile, dear.
You went for him, huh?
Oh, I went for him all right. But it was Mary Bell who had him hogtied.
Mary Bell?
She used to live next door to us. Well, one day after school...
Hiya, Mary Bell.
Johnny, you're terrible. If you keep me waiting like this again...
Ah, banana oil. Get in the car.
I promised we'd take home Margie, too.
Oh, for crying out loud. Do we always have to drag Margie McDuff along?
Well, I can't help it. After all, she does live next door to me.
Oh, boy, what a pain in the neck.
Say, did you see the new French teacher?
Yeah, I saw him.
Is he good looking? His name's Fontaine.
Look, if Margie doesn't show up in 2 minutes, we're going to have to go...
Shh, there she is. Hi, Margie.
Oh, hello, Mary Bell. Hi, Johnny.
Well, come on, McDuff. Don't just stand there.
I can't.
Well, what do you mean you can't?
Mary Bell, come here a minute. Oh, please.
What's the matter?
Mary Bell, please.
Oh, just a minute, Johnny. What are you so flustered about?
Not so loud.
Huh?
Do you have a safety pin, Mary Bell?
What do you want a safety pin for?
The elastic in my bloomers. It just broke. I felt it.
I think I've got one in my purse.
Hey, what's the matter, McDuff? What are you standing so funny for?
Take him away. Oh, please take him away.
Here's the safety pin. You want us to wait for you?
No, just go on home. And if you dare tell Johnny Green what's the matter, I'll kill you.
Oh, I won't. Goodbye, Margie.
Well, where's she going?
Well, Margie just decided to wait for something.
Oh, what's she waiting for, the fall?
Oh, Johnny, you're a scream. You don't know how funny that is.
Here I am, Margie. Hey, Margie.
Roy.
Gosh, I'm glad you waited for me. How come you didn't go home with Mary Bell?
Oh, because I didn't, that's all.
What's the matter, Margie? Anything wrong?
Oh, Roy,
you shouldn't do that.
What?
Go around with safety pins in your mouth. I knew a kid once who swallowed a safety pin.
Roy, I wish you'd go home.
Can't I go home with you?
No, I've got some things to do in the library.
Okay, I'll go with you.
No.
Well, what are you walking so funny for, Margie? Anything I can do?
Yes. Go home and don't bother me.
Well, gee whiz. Okay.
Oh, hello, Margie.
Hello, Miss Palmer.
I have those books for you for your debate.
Oh, yes, the debate. Can I pick them up in a minute, Miss Palmer? I want to go over there in the corner.
What's over there in the corner?
I've got to hitch up. I've got to catch up on my political philosophy.
Of course, dear, run along.
Thank you.
Oh, hello, Ralph. Well, how does our new French teacher like Central High?
Well, so far, very much, but it's really surprising, Isabel. You should see my classes. Standing room only. I never heard of such a passion to acquire French.
Girls, mostly, I suppose.
Yes, I believe they are in the majority at that.
You've been the talk of the school all day long. The girls think you're too darling for words.
Oh, come on now, Isabel, cut it out. Say, this is quite a nice library you've got here.
Would you like a book?
Yes, I would.
Help yourself, Ralph. We still trust the faculty.
Oh, hello. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. I just didn't know you were there.
Well, I didn't know you were there until I took these books off the shelf. Then I saw you on the other side of the rack. Do you like poetry, too?
Poetry?
Isn't there poetry on your side?
Political philosophy.
Oh, I see.
But I'm all finished with what I came in here for. Goodbye, Mr. Fontaine.
Wait a minute. You're in one of my classes, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Fontaine.
Well, do you two know each other?
Yes, Isabel. I call Miss Palmer Isabel. I've been good friends of hers for some time.
Margie's our champion debater. We're very proud of her. Why, she's the youngest student in her class.
Well, that's fine. As a matter of fact, Margie, the principal asked me to be chairman of the next debate. That's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Fontaine.
Good. Well, if you excuse me now, I'm looking for a certain volume of Wordsworth.
Why the long face, Margie?
Why did you have to tell him that I'm a debater and younger than other people? And when a person meets another person for practically the first time, she doesn't want to be known as a debater and younger than other people.
Oh, but I'm sure he'll appreciate your being so smart. Don't you think he's cute?
I don't know. I don't generally notice how teachers look.
Well, he is cute. Your books are on my desk, Margie. Good night, dear.
Good night, Miss Palmer.
I'm sure glad I waited for you, Margie. But I figured if I sat there long enough, you'd come out sometime.
You're very nice to carry my books, Roy.
Oh, that's okay. Say, when you came out of the library, who was that opened the door for you?
Mr. Fontaine, the new French teacher.
What did he want?
He merely happened to open the door for me.
I don't trust Frenchmen.
He isn't French.
Well, then why does he teach it?
Oh, Roy, sometimes you act just like... But that's Papa.
Huh?
Papa! 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 Oh, golly, that's awful.
What's awful?
Oh, that car that just went by. That was my father. I miss seeing him.
You know, Margie, I've been to your house several times, and I've never met your father.
Well, he doesn't live with us.
Why doesn't he? I mean, are your folks divorced or something?
Oh, of course not. My mother died when I was a baby, and ever since, I've lived with my grandmother.
Well, doesn't your grandmother like your father or something?
Well, of course she does. It's only... Well, for goodness sake, Roy, I don't see how it's any of your business.
Okay.
It's just that Papa was all broken up when my mother died, and he went away for a long time. And then when he came back, he just started living by himself. And it's better that way, too, because, well, after all, what does a businessman know about girls?
Oh.
Papa's a very wonderful man, and we're very fond of each other. And he has a terrific business, so we can't always see each other all the time, so we try to see each other on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh.
Of course, he pays for everything, but... Well, I mean, Papa's a widower.
Oh, yeah, he would be. I mean, if your mother... Yeah, of course, see what you mean.
Well, come on, Roy. I gotta get home sometime. Well, thanks a lot for walking home with me, Roy. I guess you better be going now. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm in no hurry.
Oh, well, would you like to come in and say hello to my grandmother?
Sure, why not?
Okay, wait here on the porch a second.
Pretty late, aren't you, Margie?
I know, Grandma, but I couldn't help it. You see how...
I know. Maribel stopped in and told me all about it. I've told you a dozen times to fix those bloomers. Naturally, they fell down.
Oh, Grandma, please. He's on the porch.
Who's on the porch?
You can come in, Roy.
Hello, Mrs. McSweeney.
Come on in, Roy, and sit down. Sit down.
Thanks, Mrs. McSweeney. You know, I've always been meaning to ask you about your fireplace here in the living room.
What's the matter with that fireplace?
Oh, I don't mean the fireplace. I mean that old lock and chain hanging up on the mantel here.
Young man, I lashed myself to the railing of the White House with that lock and chain. It took four cops and a hacksaw to pry me loose. I spent 2 days in jail.
Well, gee whiz, what for?
For a very noble cause.
Oh, really, Grandma? I don't think Mr. Hornsdale's very interested in politics.
Then it's high time he took an interest. Young man, I was campaigning for the right of women to vote. They called us suffragettes.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. My father says a woman's place is in the home.
You tell your father to wake up. A woman's place is wherever she makes it. Now, I've raised Margie to take a deep interest in politics. And someday, I hope she'll be the first woman president of the United States.
Oh.
Grandma, please.
A woman president couldn't be any worse than some of the men we've had.
Well, Roy, I know you're in a hurry to get home. It's so frightfully late as it is. Well, goodbye, Roy. I'll see you tomorrow.
Call on us again, young man.
Yeah, well, goodbye, Mrs. McSweeney. Margie.
I'm sorry you have to rush off.
Oh, I don't have to go yet.
Well, thanks again, Roy. Goodbye. Oh, Grandma.
What's the matter with you?
Don't you understand? I don't want to be the first woman president of the United States.
For heaven's sakes, why not?
Not even if you paid me. And I wish you wouldn't keep telling that to people.
Oh, now, honey, what's wrong?
Well, first Miss Palmer tells people that I'm a debater and younger than other people. And then you have to go and tell Roy about that you were chained to the White House and sent to jail, and then about me being the first woman president. Oh, he'll probably never come back.
I bet a cookie he phones you right after dinner.
Do you think so? Grandma, in your opinion, is Roy's Adam's apple very noticeable?
Why, no, dear.
You're just being nice. You can't help noticing it, I guess. It hits you right in the eye. Oh, well, I guess Roy's better than nobody.
Well, you wouldn't want a silly, vain, conceited boy like Johnny Green for a beau, would you?
Johnny? Oh, yes. Yes, Grandma. I certainly would. Hello, Cynthia.
Still working on that debate, Miss Margie? Or you just listened to that phonograph of yours?
Oh, I'm working, Cynthia.
Your grandma said the time you was in bed. Why are you waving your arms around like that for?
I'm rehearsing my gestures.
You ain't rehearsing, honey. You shadowboxing.
Cynthia, do you know anything about Frenchmen?
All I know is that they eat frog legs and snails.
Oh, I'm sure Mr. Fontaine wouldn't eat snails. Oh, every girl in school's got a crush on him already.
Including you.
I've got more sense than to get a crush on a teacher. Fat chance I'd have anyway. Cynthia, do you think a woman could learn to love a man with an Adam's apple?
Well, a friend of mine, her husband's got a garter and she's got 7 kids. Don't seem to trouble her none. Psst, come over here to the window, Miss Margie, and look down there.
What?
They're on Maribel's porch. She and that raccoon coat boy. My, they been kissing this couple. Been at it most of the evening.
I know.
You've been peeking too?
Of course not. I only meant... Well, anyway, how can people waste their time like that? Oh, I think it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Well, good night, Miss Martin.
Good night, Cynthia. It's really not so noticeable. Not when Roy wears a high collar. Oh, well. I'll be out in a sec, Roy. Look, Grandma, his father let Roy have their Model T today.
Well, that's fine. Here you are, Margie, a spare handkerchief.
Oh, I won't need one, Grandma.
No, but Roy will. That boy always has the sniffles.
Golly, I almost forgot.
Huh?
My ice skates. Everybody's going ice skating after the debate. Grandma, do you suppose maybe Papa would come and hear me debate? I mean, it is Wednesday anyway, and all it'd mean is going to the high school instead of here, and he could hear me debate.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Then ask him, Grandma. Call him now.
I do nothing of the sort. You stop by his office and ask him yourself.
But I don't think Papa likes me to stop in his office. He's always so busy.
Oh, rubbish. Now you do as I say.
Well, all right. And don't forget, Grandma, the high school auditorium at 3 o'clock.
You're sure quiet, Margie. Golly, don't worry about your father. You left a message for him, didn't you?
Yes. It wasn't his fault he wasn't in his office.
Sure is funny, Margie. I never knew your father was an undertaker.
He's a mortician. And what's so funny about it?
Oh, I just mean I didn't know he had his own funeral parlors here on Ridge Street.
It's not what you meant at all.
Well, I'm sure it's a very interesting business. I'll bet it's a good business, too. I mean, well, gee whiz, people are always dying.
He can't help being in the business he's in.
Oh, it's all right. I don't mind, honest.
Yes, you do. Everybody minds. I mind. Oh, I'd give anything on earth if he was just a bricklayer or something.
Do you suppose he'll come and hear you debate?
How do I know? Papa can hardly plan anything. It's just like you said. People are always dying.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Miss Margie MacDuff, captain of the Central High debating team. The next speaker, for the negative, is Mr. Arnold Harrison of Polytechnic High School.
Mr. Chairman, honorable judges, worthy opponents, and ladies and gentlemen, my worthy opponents, the Central High orators, has spoken to you of the high cost of keeping the Marines in Nicaragua.
Boy, oh boy, Maryville, I've had about all of that I can stand.
But where will we go, Johnny?
Ice skating.
Oh, but we can't. We're supposed to stay in the auditorium and listen.
Not me.
Anyway, the orchestra won't start at the skating rink until 4 o'clock.
Well, we'll just stand here in the corridor then. If I go back in the auditorium, I'll fall asleep.
Somebody's coming.
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. Is there a debate going on in there?
And how?
Oh, thank you, young man. Thank you very much.
Hey, can you imagine somebody wanting to hear that stuff?
Johnny, do you know who that was?
Oh.
Margie's father, Mr. Angus MacDuff. He's an undertaker.
Oh, poor Margie. A grandmother who's nuts and an undertaker for an old man.
Oh, you.
Of course not. Let me compare now the record of the Nicaraguan people during the 10 years preceding the arrival of our Marines with the notable achievements since made in that troubled land. Why, as far back as 1900...
And now, again in rebuttal, Miss Margie MacDuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, the strongest argument that our opponents have been able to advance this afternoon is that American occupation will raise the standard of living of the Nicaraguans and enable them to buy American plumbing. Ladies and gentlemen, would you turn in liberty for a bathtub? Would you? Where is the conscience and the heart of America? If we can say, give us liberty or give us death, then we have no right to tell the people of Nicaragua that they should take bathtubs instead of freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, we fought in 76, in 1860, and in 1918 to make the world safe for democracy. And we do it again and again. Don't let us ever forget our brave past. Don't let the flag of the United States mean bathtubs and plumbing instead of liberty. I say to you, take the Marines out of Nicaragua and bring them home to defend liberty always, but never plumbing. Thank you.
Gosh, Margie, you are wonderful.
Janie, he's here. My father's here.
Where, Margie? Where?
In the fourth row with my grandma and Mr. Fontaine.
You know, Angus, sitting here and watching those children ice skate, I've a mind to rent a pair myself. Well, are you glad you came, Mr. Fontaine?
I wouldn't have missed this for anything. And I might easily have, Mrs. McSweeney, if you hadn't introduced yourself at school.
I had to introduce myself. Margie's got a crush on you.
Well, Mr. McDuff, your daughter's almost as good a skater as she is a debater. You know, Margie would look awfully nice in a skating outfit like Mary Bell Tenner's.
Well, buy her one, Grandma. Buy her one. Just send me the bill.
You approve of a young girl exposing her bare legs, Mr. Fontaine?
I certainly do. Always keep in mind, Mrs. McSweeney, that I studied in Paris, France.
She's right. She's right. The child is right.
Agnes, what are you mumbling about?
We should take the Marines out of Nicaragua. She's absolutely right. Yes, sir. I'll write my congressman about it. Might even send a telegram to Senator Whipple.
Good.
Why did we send the Marines down there in the first place? You tell me that, sir. You just tell me that.
I'm sorry I'm such a terrible ice skater, Margie. Maybe when they play a slower tune, I'll do better.
You're doing beautifully, Roy. Isn't it fun?
No. Look. Look at Mary Bell and Johnny.
Oh, they do skate divinely.
Couple of show-offs. Gosh, Margie, that sure was a swell speech you made this afternoon.
Oh, thank you, Roy.
And you look, well, you look so sort of intense and full of fire.
Golly, I did.
Hi, Margie. Hello, Roy.
Hello, Hi. Mary Bell. Isn't he ice divine? Oh, hello, Johnny.
Hi, McDuff.
Well, I won't be long, Johnny.
Where's she going?
Oh, she's got to get another lace for her shoe.
Well, just don't stand here, Johnny. Can't you see Margie wants you to skate with her?
Oh, don't be silly, Roy. Well, he doesn't want to skate with me.
Oh, I don't mind. Come on, McDuff.
Why, Johnny.
That girl is right. Rank imperialism, that's what it is. Why don't we let the Nicaraguans mind their own business?
Oh, forget it, Angus.
Huh?
Look at your daughter. She's skating with that Johnny Green.
She's waving at us.
Hi, Margie. You're doing fine.
Wait a minute. They've stopped skating. Something's wrong with Margie.
She's holding her stomach. I'll bet it was those hot dogs she and Roy were eating before.
Oh, what's the matter, Margie? You sick?
No. Just go away, Johnny, please.
But if you don't feel good, you better hang on to me. Hey, Mary Bell.
I'm coming.
I've got to sit down.
Here? On the ice?
I've got to. And go away.
Well, gee whiz, okay.
Mary Bell, stand in front of me. Oh, please.
Margie, you're losing something. Look.
I know. I never did fix them. What'll I do?
Gosh, I don't know. Look, they're coming. Your grandma and your father and Mr. Fontaine. Mr. Fontaine, gee, are you lucky.
Hey, what's happened? Is she badly hurt?
Oh, it looks like something fell down. I mean, she fell down, I guess. Oh, Margie, sit on him. Sit on him.
I'm trying to. Oh.
It's probably your ankle. Pardon me, please.
Let me in there. Clear out of here, everybody. Go on. Shoo.
Grandma, it is my ankle. My ankle hurts.
Well, I'll get a doctor.
Just relax, Angus.
I've got a muster. I can bind your ankle temporarily, at least.
Now, Margie, stop squirming. What are you looking for?
Come here, Grandma.
Well?
Grandma. My bloomers.
Your what?
Grandma.
Where are they?
I'm sitting on them, I think. But if I get up...
Well, for heaven's sake.
Maybe while Daddy and Mr. Fontaine are fixing my ankle, I can sort of slip them into your coat.
Well, hurry up.
Get ready, Grandma. Grandma, they're gone.
What do you know? Angus, I think you and Mr. Fontaine better get a doctor after all. I'll stay right here with Margie while you talk.
Johnny,
wasn't it awful?
I can't figure out what happened to her, Mary Bell. She was skating fine, and all of a sudden, she kind of lost her equilibrium.
You said it, Johnny. Her best embroidered ones, too.
We continue with the second act of Margie, starring Jean Crane in the title role and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine.
Margie,
Well, let's leave 1928 for a brief moment and return to the attic in the pleasant little house, where the young Bobby Soxer continues to press her mother for the secrets of her youth.
Holy cow, Mother. You mean to say you lost your bloomers in front of all those people at the skating rink?
I'm afraid I did, darling. But I was hoping desperately that no one besides Grandma and Mary Bell knew the awful truth. The others had a vague idea that I'd sprained my ankle or something. Apart from the bloomers, I'd had a very happy day. That night after dinner...
Well, Margie, you certainly have had a big day.
Oh, a wonderful day, Grandma.
Call losing your best bloomers wonderful?
Golly, no. But I did get to skate with Johnny Green. And Papa came to the debate, and Mr. Fontaine... And Papa stayed for dinner and kissed me goodnight twice.
I'm afraid you got your father all worked up over Nicaragua.
He seemed very interested.
I still wonder what happened to your bloomers. They couldn't have just walked away.
Oh, Grandma, please, let's not talk about it. I'll never be able to face anyone again.
Now, who on earth...
Well, could it be Roy? Well, maybe it's just Mary Bell.
Who is it, Cynthia?
It's that Maxim business, Sweeney. It's Mrs. Fontaine.
Oh, no. No, Grandma. Just look at me in my bathrobe.
Well, come on in, Mr. Fontaine.
But I'll bet he saw. I mean, this afternoon, my...
Well, how nice of you to stop by.
Good evening, Mrs. McSweeney. Hello, Margie. I just happened to be taking a walk in the neighborhood. I often take a walk after dinner, and it occurred to me to drop in and see how the invalid was getting along. Well, how is your ankle, Margie?
Oh, it's fine. It hardly hurts at all.
Well, I'm delighted. After all, it'd be certainly a shame not to be able to go to the prom next week because of a sprained ankle.
Have a chair, Mr. Fontaine.
Thank you.
Margie, if your foot's really better, why don't you go to your room and get Mr. Fontaine's muffler?
Oh, yes. It was really very nice of you to bind my ankle with your lovely muffler, Mr. Fontaine.
Well, get it. That's probably what he stopped by for.
Oh, Margie, just a minute. Here.
A package? For me?
Yes, in the excitement this afternoon, I believe you lost your handkerchief.
Oh. I'll get your muffler.
A handkerchief, Mr. Fontaine?
Well.
That was very tactful, thank you.
Remember, Mrs. McSweeney, I studied in Paris, France.
Mary Bell.
I just saw the light go on in your room. What did Mr. Fontaine want? That was him, wasn't it?
Oh, he just came to call on me.
But aren't you excited? I mean, gosh, Mr. Fontaine. Did you know he was coming?
Well, naturally. People don't let people call on people unless they have permission.
Did he bring you anything? I mean, candy or flowers?
Oh, yes. He brought me a lovely gift.
Margie, what?
Mary Bell, when a person receives an intimate gift from a gentleman friend, she doesn't go around blabbing about what it is.
Intimate? What do you mean? What did he bring you?
Oh, something.
Margie, do you suppose Mr. Fontaine is going to invite you to the prom?
The prom? Well, I really don't know what Mr. Fontaine's motives are. Excuse me, Mary Bell. Men hate to be kept waiting, you know. The prom? Oh, as if anyone else had asked me about Roy Hornsdale. What if he does? Oh, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, gosh.
Margie?
I'm coming, Grandma.
Take it easy. Mr. Fontaine just left. He said you can bring his muffler to school tomorrow. Margie, did you hear me?
Yes, Grandma. I heard.
Why aren't you dressed? Didn't you tell me the prom starts at 8:30?
I'm not going to the prom, Grandma. That was Roy on the phone just now.
He's got the sniffles again.
Well, it's his tonsils, too. His folks won't let him go. Oh, it doesn't matter. I just as soon stay home.
Well, Mary Bell's going to the prom with Johnny. I'm sure they'd be glad to take you along.
Without an escort? I'd rather die. Besides, Johnny doesn't like me tagging along even to come home from school.
Look out the window. She's coming here.
Who?
Mary Bell. Margie, 20 years from now, you'll look at Johnny Green and you'll wonder what you ever saw in him.
20 years from now, I'll be an old woman and it won't matter.
I'm coming, Mary Belle.
She'll just gloat over you. Don't you dare tell her what happened to Roy.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
You could pretend, couldn't you?
Hello, Mary Belle.
Margie, I just simply had to come over. Look, Johnny sent them. Imagine two orchids. Oh, hello, Mrs. McSweeney.
Hello, you flapper.
Oh. Orchids. Well, I suppose you'll be going with Roy, huh?
No, his cold's worse.
Oh, Margie.
But I'm still going.
You are? But who with?
Oh, you'll find out.
Margie McDuff, I bet you've been holding out on me right along. But it couldn't be, not with him. Not with Mr. Fontaine.
They say Frenchmen dance very well.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'd really better get back. I'm going to take a bubble bath in a simply terrific perfume I have, which absolutely is guaranteed to intoxicate men by its fragrance. Goodbye, Margie.
Goodbye, Mary Belle.
Mr. Fontaine. Gosh.
I'm going up to my room, Grandma.
Yes, dear. I'll get the phone. Hello?
Hello. Hello, Grandma. This is Angus. I hope I didn't disturb anybody.
Angus McDuff, you don't have to apologize to call up here. What's on your mind?
Why, not a thing, Grandma, not a thing. I just wondering how everyone is.
Say, hold the line a second. Margie! I just wanted to be sure the coast was clear, Angus.
What do you mean, Grandma? Incidentally, you'll be very interested to know I just threw a salesman out of my office.
You did? Why?
Tried to sell me a gross of hand-dipped candles made in Nicaragua. Oh, I told him a thing or two. Made it the point of our bayonets, I told him. Don't talk to me about candles, I said, until you can bring me word that our Marines have been withdrawn, sir.
Were the candles any good?
Well, what do I care? Nothing is good, madam, if it betrays the heart and conscience of America.
Angus, have you got anything special to do tonight?
We Americans fought in 76. What do you mean, have I anything to do?
Well, have you?
Well, Mr. Van Buren of the Forest Acres Mortician Service was coming over to discuss a merger of our interests.
Well, how about merging your interests with Margie's?
Huh?
Angus, she's had her heart set on going to the high school prom tonight. Only this boy she was going with can't make it.
Well, that's a little out of my line, Grandma. I haven't danced in 20 years.
Who cares?
Well, I could see Van Buren on Monday.
Good. Now, don't be later than 8 o'clock, and don't you dare show up without a corsage.
And Margie likes gardenias, doesn't she?
Gardenias, my foot. Orchids. Three orchids.
Yes, Grandma. 8 o'clock with three orchids.
Thanks, Angus. Goodbye. Margie! Margie! Come down here. I've got news for you.
I simply don't understand, Grandma. Who's coming to take me to the prom?
Now stop asking questions and get into your formal.
Grandma, if you called someone and made him take me, I'll never forgive you.
He called me. He's a great admirer of yours.
It's not Joe Kelly, Grandma. He's only 15 and his hands are always clammy.
He's much older than 15. And his hands are not clammy.
Grandma, do you remember that bubble bath I gave you for Christmas?
Of course.
Would you let me use a little? Mary Belle's taking a bubble bath and she says it simply intoxicates men with its exotic fragrance. And so I thought...
Well, help yourself, honey. But hurry up.
If you don't hold still, Miss Margie, I'll never get you hooked up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cynthia. Grandma, do you think I look sophisticated?
Well, yes, for your age.
The doorbell?
I'll go down.
Grandma, who is it? You've simply got to tell me.
You'll find out. He's on time anyway.
Don't worry, honey. As soon as she's downstairs, I'll go down, too, and take a peek. And I'll tell you who it is.
Is a surprise.
I hope you'll excuse me, but I was driving by, so I...
Well, you look very nice in your tuxedo, Mr. Fontaine. And that corsage is lovely.
I'm about to call for Mrs. Palmer. You know, the school librarian. I'm taking her to the prom tonight. I thought I'd leave this for Margie. It's her French theme. She was anxious to know what grade I'd given her.
What grade did you give her?
Hey, of course. You know, Margie's an exceptionally bright child, Mrs. McSweeney. An enchanting child, I might add.
Child, indeed. I doubt if you're 8 years older.
Well... Frankly, I did lie a little bit about my age to get on the faculty here. Well, I suppose Margie's going to the prom. Who's taking her?
Her father.
Oh? Well, just between us, I wish I were. You know, it's a very strange thing. I've never seen a girl.
Yeah, Miss Margie, that Frenchman. My, my. And is he dressed up and with flowers, too?
But it can't be, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, Cynthia. Do you suppose Grandma bribed him to take me on account of I didn't have anyone else?
He don't need no bribe, honey. He's a young man, ain't he? And you a pretty girl, ain't you? Child, I've been telling you that all along.
Do you really think he likes me? Oh, I've had a crush on him ever since the day he came to Central High. My diary's simply full of him, Cynthia.
Well, it looks like a two-way crush to me, honey. Now, go on, get out there. Go on, get.
Margie, well, good evening. How pretty you look.
Oh, thank you. You look very pretty, too. I mean, you look...
Excuse me, telephone.
Oh, what a beautiful corsage. Why, how perfectly lovely of you to bring me flowers.
Margie, I was...
Oh, they're just beautiful.
Margie, this French theme of yours, I thought that perhaps you... Well, Margie,
that... For you, Margie, it's Helen Day.
Excuse me a second, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, I know I'm going to wake up and find this is all just a dream.
Margie, you don't understand.
Hello, Helen.
Mrs. McSweeney.
Don't have to tell me, I know. She thinks you're taking her.
But what am I going to do?
Well, it's all my fault. We've simply got to think of something.
And mine are camellias, Helen. Oh, they're simply gorgeous. Look, Helen, I have to fly out. Mr. Fontaine's waiting for me. Okay, I'll see you at the prom. Goodbye. Helen thought I couldn't go to the prom on account of Roy's tonsils, Mr. Fontaine. But when I told her you were taking me, why, she was just speechless. Oh, this card on my corsage. I'm going to put this card in my scrapbook and keep it forever. Why, I'll even... The card, it says, Miss Palmer.
I'm sorry, Margie. That's what I was trying to explain to you. You see, I stopped by merely to bring you your French theme. It's excellent.
Thank you.
Margie.
Let her go.
Oh, this is terrible. Look... I'll call Miss Palmer up and explain. She'll understand.
No, now you just run along, Mr. Fontaine. Margie wouldn't go with you now in a million years.
Margie! Hey, Margie! Margie! Hello, Mary Bell.
Margie, Helen just phoned and said Mr. Fontaine was over at your house now.
Oh, absolutely. He's here.
Well, aren't you thrilled to death? Margie, listen. Why don't you and Mr. Fontaine sit with us tonight?
Well, it's okay by me, but he's probably made other arrangements.
Well, go down and ask him. He won't mind just so he's sitting next to you. Gosh, Margie, how'd you ever do it?
Oh, honestly, Mary Bell, you're so funny.
What?
You're so gullible, just as bad as Helen. She fell for it, too.
Fell for what?
Oh, honestly, it's just a scream. Well, I'm not going with Mr. Fontaine. I just pretended he was taking me just for fun. Oh, you don't really think I'd be seen at a prom with a teacher, do you?
But didn't he bring you a corsage? Helen said.
Oh, that was absolutely priceless. Well, I pretended to think they were for me, just to see what he would do. And he was so fussed and so embarrassed that it was all I could do to keep from bursting out laughing. Honestly, Mary Bell, he was a scream.
Margie McDuff, I just don't understand you.
Oh, I wish I were dead. I wish I were dead.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you are listening to Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFR. Dearborn.
Our curtain rises on Act 3 of Margie, starring Jean Crane as the lady in question and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine.
Days are never blue.
Once again, we swing briefly back to the present, where, upstairs in the attic, mother and daughter comb through the events of 20 years ago. From the album of photographs, Joyce has just taken a picture. Her mother smiles reflectively as she looks at it.
Yes, Joyce. This is a picture of the 1928 high school prom.
Oh, and you're not even there. Oh, gee, what an awful break, not being able to go to the prom.
Oh, but I did go. And there's my picture. See?
That's you? Golly. But who brought you?
Well, about 10 minutes after Mr. Fontaine had left the house, two other gentlemen arrived on our front porch. One of them was Roy Hornsdale.
Why, it's you, Mr. McDuff. Good evening.
Good evening, young man. Good evening.
Gosh, is that your car? That log limousine?
It's one of my cars, yes.
Gosh. How come you're calling on Margie on Saturday?
A man does not call on his daughter.
Oh, Margie says you always call Wednesdays. You bringing her flowers?
Yes.
Hey, you're not bringing her flowers left over from a...
Young man, they have an expression in Nicaragua that very aptly describes a person of your ill manners. It goes... Oh, what am I wasting my time talking to you for? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Roy Hornsdale. Gee whiz, Mr. McDuff, don't you remember me? I was at the skating rink the afternoon Margie hurt her ankle.
Oh.
Hasn't she told you about me?
No. And either you ring that doorbell or let me.
Oh, she's a wonderful girl, Mr. McDuff.
I'm well aware of that fact.
I was supposed to take her to the prom tonight, but... I got a cold.
Then go to bed.
My folks said I could come over as long as we didn't go out and I kept warm.
Does anyone believe in coming in? What is this, a convention?
Oh, hello, Grandma.
What are you doing here, Roy?
Good evening, Mrs. McSweeney. I figured since Margie's not going to the prom
and
that
what
I...
makes you think she's not going to the prom?
Huh?
Cynthia? Take Roy into the kitchen and get him some hot milk or something.
Milk? Milk?
Get in here, Mr. Hornsdale.
Margie, he's here, honey. Now, listen, Angus, I should explain, but I haven't got time. Margie's been crying. Now, don't ask why. Just be very tactful.
Tactful? Did that sniveling boy in there make her cry?
Oh, no. Roy's quite innocent.
Oh.
Hello, Papa.
Margie, well, come on down, my dear. Oh, you look beautiful. Simply beautiful.
Why, thank you. Papa, you're all dressed up.
Well, you wouldn't want him to go to the prom in a business suit, would you? He's taking you. That was the big surprise.
Honestly, Papa, you're taking me? Are you sure you want to?
Honey, I've waited over 16 years for the privilege. Here.
Orchids. Papa, 3 orchids.
Well, I hope you won't be disappointed, Margie. I'm not a very good dancer.
Oh, Papa, I'd rather be going to the dance with you than anyone else in the whole world. Excuse me while I get my coat, Papa.
Well, Angus, what are you thinking?
I was thinking, Grandma, that my daughter is just as pretty and every bit as sweet as yours ever was.
I'm ready, Papa. Good night, Grandma.
Good night, dear. Gee whiz, is Margie going out? She's gone out.
Oh, gee whiz, I came here to read poetry to her. Who am I going to read poetry to now?
Cynthia?
Not to me, Mr. Hornsdale, and finish your milk.
It's Margie.
And her father. How you've changed, Mr. Fontaine.
I beg your pardon?
Come on, Papa. Did you see him, Johnny? Her father. But I want to explain what happened tonight.
It doesn't matter, honey. Whatever happened was a wonderful break for me. Now, let's see if we can find a table.
But how come Margie came with her old man?
Why, I suppose she wanted to be sure of dancing with someone, Johnny.
Hey, come to think of it, it's the first time I've ever seen Margie.
Huh? Just what does that mean?
I don't know. Baby.
Is this table all right, Papa? Are you sure?
Oh, this is fine, dear, fine. I'll get some refreshments.
Good evening, Margie.
Hello, Miss Palmer.
Good evening, Margie. Evening, Mr. McDuff. Nice party, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, indeed. Who is that with Mr. Fontaine?
Miss Palmer, our librarian.
Oh, very attractive.
She's well preserved for her age.
Margie, that's a waltz they're playing.
Yes, Papa.
Shall we try it?
Oh, I'd love to. Papa, do you know this is the first time that you've ever danced with me?
Second time.
When?
When you were about 3 months old.
I beg your pardon, but may I cut in, sir?
Well, by all means, young man. By all means.
Johnny.
Well, you sure had them all fooled, Margie. They thought you were coming with Mr. Fontaine.
Why, how absurd.
Yeah, that's what I told them. I said, why would she want to come with some drip from the faculty when he...
May I cut in?
Oh, for Pete's sake, where did you come from?
May I?
Well, well, see you later, Margie.
Thanks, Johnny.
Not even one little smile, Margie?
I don't feel like smiling.
Why?
Oh, I made such a fool of myself. You're just trying to be nice. You don't have to dance with me.
Between you and me, Margie, I'd rather dance with you than anyone else in this room.
If you only knew how I feel. If you... What did you say?
I said I'd rather dance with you than anyone else in this room, and I meant it.
Anyone?
Anyone.
Oh.
Look, Maribel, Margie's doing all right.
Oh, it's just a waltz. Who wants to waltz?
Besides, he's just taking pity on her, like Johnny did.
Oh, I sure wish Mr. Fontaine would take pity on me. Well, what do you know? Johnny's taking pity on her again.
Hmm? I did it to you, Johnny. I guess you can do it to me.
I didn't think I'd see you so soon, Johnny.
Hey, gee whiz, Margie. Where you been all my life?
Right under your nose, I guess.
Hey, you're sure a smooth dancer. How about doing this more often?
Well, I think that would be just one. Oh, no.
Margie, what's the matter? What's wrong?
Oh, no, not tonight.
Margie, you look so funny. You're not going to faint, are you?
That's a very good idea.
Margie!
Well, Joyce, that was the last time I ever wore bloomers. I was about to throw them away a few years ago, but your father insisted I keep them.
Oh, Mother, to think that it happened again at the prom. How perfectly ghastly it must have been for you.
Oh, it was, darling. Ghastly.
But what happened? Who finally got to take you home? Grandpa or who?
Why, your father, of course.
Hey, where is everybody?
We're up here, Daddy, in the attic.
Hello, funny face.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, sweet. Well, what have you two been doing up here,
Oh, we've had more fun, Daddy. Mother's been telling me all about the beau she had when she went to Central High School.
Oh, she has, has she?
Look at this snapshot of Johnny Green. Mm. Oh, he sounds simply terrific. Do you remember him?
Yes, dear. He was a drip. A drip of the first water.
Ralph, dear, and that doesn't sound so well coming from the principal of Central High School.
You heard me. I said drip, darling.
But where is he now? What does he do?
He's a plumber. He lives over in Glenley, I think. He works for a fellow named Roy Hornsdale.
You don't say.
Mm.
Oh, look, Daddy, all these old phonograph records. Listen to this one. How about it, Daddy? Can you jive?
Well, I can't exactly say I'm good at it, but I'd sure like to try.
Here we go.
Hey, take it easy.
Where's Papa, darling? Didn't he come home with you?
No, he was detained. The ambassador will be home for dinner, though.
Ambassador? You mean he got it?
Take a look at the evening paper. I put it right there in the trunk.
Angus Macduff appointed new ambassador to Nicaragua. Well, I'll be darned.
And so ends the story of Margie. And for their excellent performances, our thanks to Gene Crane and Glenn Langan, who returned to the Footlights for a bow. Gene, since your last appearance on this stage, your chief production has been Young Paul Jr. All our heartiest congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Keeley.
Is it your first baby, Gene?
Oh, yes, of course. Why?
Well, the things the way they are now, it's a wonder you can get a new one without turning in the old one.
I suppose that young man keeps you pretty busy, Gene.
Oh, I should say he does. With bottles to sterilize and formulas to mix, I never get a chance to do much else.
Oh, Gene, it's a shame to blame that on the baby.
Oh, we're used to pinning things on the baby.
I can well imagine.
But seriously, it is. It's the first house of my own I've ever had, and I'm really crazy about it. It hasn't a single floor.
No floor? What do you walk on?
Oh, Glenn. Well, it sounds as if Gene were walking on air these days. A new home, a new baby. Do you do your own housekeeping, Gene?
I do the cooking, Mr. Keeley. Come up sometime and I'll serve you both a meal.
Speaking of cooking, what are you serving up next week on Lux, Mr. Keeley?
Well, next Monday night we bring our audience a thrilling, romantic, and suspenseful drama. J. Arthur Rank's production, The Seventh Veil. And our stars are two great favorites of this theater, Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. The story of a talented and lovely woman in the shadow of a strange spell, The Seventh Veil is a tempestuous drama of love and emotion building to a startling climax.
Oh, that ought to make a great play for your listeners, Mr. Keeley. Good night.
Good night, and all our thanks for Margie. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino in The Seventh Veil. This is William Keeley saying goodnight to you from Hollywood.
Gene Crane and Glenn Langan appeared by arrangement with 20th Century Fox, producers of Nightmare Alley and Kiss of Death. Barbara Lawrence will soon be seen in the 20th Century Fox production, Captain from Castile. Heard in our cast tonight were Bill Johnstone as Macduff, Gil Stratton Jr. as Roy, and Clark Gordon, Francis Robinson, Mary Lou Harrington, Lillian Randolph, William Roy, and Julie Bennett. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This program is rebroadcast to our servicemen and women overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. And this is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear Seventh Veil with Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. Be sure to listen next Monday night to the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Seventh Veil with Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. Stay tuned for My Friend Irma, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Photography is more than an image. It's a journey of self-discovery. Check out the Pathways to the Self photography exhibition at the Plymouth Arts and Recreation Center, Park Art Gallery, running now through March 17th and open to the public for free. Experience the powerful work of four emerging artists, including HFC's own world religions instructor Joel Geffen, Pollyanne McKillop, Pamela Sayer, and Tim Haber, as they explore the subjects that shape their artistic vision. And don't miss the free artist reception this Friday, February 7th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., featuring food, drinks, music, and a chance to meet the artists. Plymouth Arts and Recreation Center, Park, Art Gallery is located at 650 Church Street in Plymouth. For details, call Park at 734-927-4090.
Tune in Thursdays from 8 to 11 p.m. to hear The Jump Button. I'm your host, Rob with Two B's. On The Jump Button, you will hear music from and about video games, soundtracks, animation, and more. It's your weekly pop culture playlist and all the super dorky radio you can handle every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m. Heard only here on WHFR.FM.
All right. That is going to wrap up today's Radio Vault features. We just heard Lux Radio Theater starring Jean Crane in Margie, originally broadcast on CBS back on September 8, 1947, in case you're taking notes. And if you're not, that's okay. Also on today's show, we heard the CBS Radio Workshop and Lovers, Villains, and Fools starring Helen Hayes. That show from much later, May 18, 1956. And we earlier heard the Jack Benny Show from 1939. And Jack's birthday party, celebration, whatever. So that is going to do it for us until we bring you the mysteries on Sunday night. We're going to make way for this just in and Mountain Stage after that. Have yourself a good afternoon. We'll talk to you on the flip side. See ya.
listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists.
The following pre-recorded hour is a WHFR Dearborn new music presentation.
Listening to the only station making waves. This is WHFR.FM 89.3 on your FM dial or on the web at www.WHFR.FM. I am Mr. Anderson, and this is This Just In, WHFR's new music spotlight show, where we do exactly that. It's the phrase that I always say because it makes sense, because it's also true.